You are about to opt in to Monerotopia, a show for the Monero community where all are welcome to join. From noob to maxi, no matter what bags you hold. Just sit back and relax to the sweet sounds of Monero's latest progress. Or if you're feeling inspired, join us on stage. Remember, the only thing that can stop Monero is a false belief that it can be stopped. And if you want to win the revolution faster, we recommend you remove your XMR from all custodial exchanges immediately. Warning, voting accidents are common around here. Don't forget to properly secure your private keys. Monerotopia starts now.
All right. I love chaos in the beginning. Hold on.
It do be like that.
No, I was thinking it'd be good to play a little, like, 5-minute intro before we come on, just gets people in the room. I see it on X sometimes.
Oh, I gotcha.
Videos, and they haven't started yet. It's good. It gets people like, yeah. So don't miss any of this. Miss any of these amazing interactions that we have.
Incredible intros to the stream.
No, but I woke up very excited today when I saw the Luke Parker tweet.
I did see that. Yeah, I did. And I read through the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, Can we bring it up?
Yeah, gotcha.
So you're just saying you didn't do the intro. You played the intro, didn't you?
Yep, I did.
Yeah. Let's bring up that tweet.
All right. The myth, the man, the legend, Mr. Luke Parker. Long thread. He's basically going through his own thought process and some recent developments that he has made. How much of this should I read through?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the main points he's making here is that, you know, within the last couple of months, there's been like various breakthroughs in terms of full chain membership proofs, how it will be implemented, and then realizing what some of the other benefits might be. And it's just all happened in a very fast pace, and it's
very short amount of time.
Tremendous amount of progress. Obviously, I guess, you know, things still can go wrong, right? I think things still need to be proven. But Luke seems to be pretty confident in what the potential is here. And we've gone from waiting years for Seraphis, which we were excited about, very excited about, out of a sheer need to improve ring signatures in any way possible. And, you know, even initially that Seraphis improvement wasn't a be-all, end-all. It was just still kind of another arguably temporary improvement in terms of ring signatures. It would get us pretty far. Theoretically, we'd be doing pretty well, but it wasn't the home run. And then, you know, anybody who's been following this closely knows that Luke came up with the idea of implementing or how we could implement full chain membership proofs on Monero. And originally, the thought was it had to be done through the Seraphis upgrade. And some of the breakthroughs that have come about is, I guess, number one, that it doesn't have to be upgraded with the Seraphis upgraded. It could be upgraded before that using the current ring signatures, so kind of built, integrated into that. And then there were additional insights that have been made since, where we're realizing it could be done, you know, much, much faster. And the end result being that it's not going to have a negative or an impact any greater than what Seraphis would have had in terms of transaction speed, right? Tux, am I correct in that? I am, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, and then I think even transactions are going to get larger, right? But overall, we're quickly realizing that, you know, full chain membership proofs might be even more impressive than what we had originally envisioned. And it's super exciting to see that coming from Luke talking about it. He's very excited about it. It's like you can literally see the light bulbs going off in his head. And he, you know, it sounds like there might even be more, you know, potentially good news with this down the line as more eyes get on it and look at it. So super exciting. Baudi, what do you think about this?
No, I didn't see it this morning. I'm not going to lie. I just rolled out of bed. I'm reading it now here. It looks like he's saying that Jamtis will be functional with existing addresses too, which is something.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah,
right. So there was that concern that we would need, like, right. So now, so we are going to need to to deprecate old addresses, right? There'll be an upgrade in addresses.
I don't know. I mean, now it looks like he's saying that they work with existing addresses. So, I mean, there was good reasons to upgrade the address. That kind of stuff is really hard, but it's better to do it now than when we get more adoption.
Yeah, so overall, very good.
I'd say the other thing, too, is that, you know, the people that need and want Monero now are, for the most part, going to be willing to flip over, to switch over to a new address scheme, and, like, to change over with various hard forks. Like, there's nothing else that people are using the darknets. All of us are, like, pretty dedicated actors here. But as adoption grows, it definitely would be harder to get people, you know, on board to flip over to new addresses.
Right. And now we're able to get that done with the full chain membership proof implementation at that time. So ripping off the Band-Aid sooner than later.
It's like a two-in-one.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I find it all extremely, extremely exciting. What was the other? Oh, then he also talked about kind of future-proofing Monero, right? In terms of, you know, forward privacy.
I mean, that's what, like, looks like Jamtis will do, is that it gives them forward secrecy for all future outputs.
Right.
Which is, that's great. I guess on existing addresses. And then solves the Janus attack, except when trying to link a main address with sub-addresses. So sub-addresses will be even more advantageous to use in the future if this is the case. And they are already now.
Yeah, and then at the end he compares it to you know, other tech that's out there. Kind of, I think Luke believes it. This basically puts us at the level of Zcash's Orchard, which is incredible to see that come about so quick.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I had to cover it. Like, we got to get this. You know, this is like, this is the news, right? This is what people should be excited about in all of crypto. Like, this should be the main focus in crypto if things were right. If people were in it for the right reasons, if they understood what crypto is supposed to be all about, you're watching Luke in real time make breakthroughs into how to make the most used digital cash even more resistant to being traced in any way. As we're seeing on the other side, governments kind of ramp up their attack on privacy tech. Monero is having a renaissance in its ability to thwart any potential government attacks. That's exciting.
It's exciting.
And I wish we had a few more people interested in that kind of thing.
I'm seeing a change, though, man. I mean, you got to be seeing it too, right? On Twitter, there's new people talking about, you know, Bitcoin privacy and Monero.
I keep seeing really large accounts start to mention Monero, just as like a need for the privacy, as Bitcoin privacy tech is currently non-existent.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we're getting there slowly, little by little. It's a shame that we had to get there this way, right? It's a shame that the School of Hard Knocks had to push people towards better decisions. But I mean, it's something that we were saying for a long time. Like, guys, if it's not sufficient to be in the dark web, like, if you can't use it on the dark web, then you probably shouldn't be using it in just your regular life either.
Exactly. Let me shill Monerotopia real quick. Guys, get your tickets, monerotopia.com. We will be limiting the amount of VIP tickets, so that's probably your best reason to try to get tickets as soon as possible. The reason we end up limiting that is because we have a speaker dinner, and then we do it in a location that's smaller than the actual venue. So we usually limit it to probably about like 100 people. So that's probably your best reason to grab your tickets as soon as possible. And then obviously we'll raise prices a little bit at some point, but always keeping it for anybody who doesn't want the VIP ticket, we keep it super affordable to attend. We probably will add a virtual ticket at some point. I don't know. We may not even do the virtual conference thing. We're deciding. So we want everybody to, you know, come in person, come experience Monerotopia. So definitely want to push people in that direction to do that. And, you know, we also offer the local ticket. The local ticket, I think we have for $25. It's just like a nominal fee. We want to make it as accessible as possible. If people just want to come and they can't afford, hit us up. You know, we'll give you a free ticket, right? If it's about the cost of attending, we want you down there. Yeah, that's it. I won't go into detail on other stuff, but we're working on an amazing speaker lineup. It's going to be really great. I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking if we play it right, I do think there is a wave that's happening out there in the cryptosphere with regards to people being woken up to the fact that this stuff needs to be private. And I think we need to ride that wave a little bit. And I'm seeing it kind of bleed into the greater freedom movement and liberty movement, people understanding this. So I'm hoping with Monerotopia, we could tap into that a little bit and make the conference much, you know, larger than last year and try to get some new voices involved. So anybody who's listening to this that wants to get involved in any way, email us, monerotopia@protonmail.com. If you're, you know, a project, if you're working on some privacy tech, you want to be involved. We want this to be as open to all people that are interested in the concept of digital cash as possible. You know, so whether you're into Bcash, whether you're into Litecoin, but for privacy tech reasons, whatever your privacy tech crypto choice is, we're trying to bring those people into Monerotopia. And, you know, I've always said this, I think ultimately or currently, the amount of people that are actually interested in crypto for digital cash tech reasons is pretty small. So I think it's a shame for us to not all unite and bring that interest together and, you know, let the best tech win, right? Come together and check things out. But ultimately all together work on the goal of building out a circular economy, outside of the state system using digital cash. So come on down to Monerotopia. I'll leave it at that.
Hey, while we're on the topic of chilling events, I am going to chill the Monero SF meetup. If you're in the area, in the San Francisco area, come by tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. PDT to 11:30 p.m. PDT. I'll be a Monero meetup. I and Vic will be doing a couple talks. There'll be food, hangout, awesome. Music.
Is this the first San Fran Monero meetup?
It's
at some point.
Possible. Not any previously that I know of. I know there's been a lot of New York ones, Chicago ones. Don't know about any in San Fran, though. But yeah, we already got a lot of people. We got 52 going. So yeah, if you're in the area, come by.
Oh, super jealous. This is tomorrow?
It's tomorrow, yep.
Wow. That's going to be awesome. Very cool. And you're going to speak and Vic's going to speak?
Yeah, I'm going to do more of a general Monero presentation, given the audience that's probably going to be there. And then Vic's probably going to talk about a couple things. So, yep.
Now, what's the guy's name who's running? Because he was reaching out to me too. He's been on the show before.
Yeah, Sir Jams a lot.
Sir Jams a lot.
He's the man.
Yes. Sir Jamsalot, great job, man. This guy is like, he's out
there. He's setting it up. Oh, yeah.
He's out there running for Monero. He's going full force. He's been to like various conferences doing kudos. Sir Jamsalot, you're always welcome to jump on the show and shill the things that you're working on, any kudos you got going, raise funds for your efforts. I think you're doing a fantastic job, Sir Jamsalot. Really is. All right, man. Buddy, you want to take it away with Bryce?
Yeah, let's do it.
The Monerotopia Price Report segment is sponsored by Local Monero. Avoid using KYC exchanges. Buy and sell Monero directly for fiat, peer-to-peer.
Good morning. So, looking here at the Monero US dollar chart. I guess really what we got to talk about price today most of all is there's been some negative action overall in the market. And I think this probably shouldn't be too surprising to us. But as far as Monero goes, we've actually had a little bit more positive action, I would say. So this is the weekly chart, and obviously this is kind of a long time frame. Just wanted to make sure you catch our bearings here. This big red dildo was price crashing to the downside when CZ, not CZ, he'd been removed actually, when Binance decided to delist Monero. But that was actually kind of a celebration point for us, which was great. And so since then, we've been in this kind of triangle pattern here, this sort of sideways triangle, and we're just kind of barely touching up on the top side of that. There's the potential to break this thing to the upside. That would definitely be something that would be price positive, right? That would be a positive signal here. Break this thing to the upside and then go to the top. I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath for that, just simply because the rest of the market does look It looks mildly problematic. I'm not saying that that the top is in or anything, but the rest of the markets don't look super great. We'll take a look at that in a little bit. We can also see that during this general crypto pullback, the Monero to Bitcoin price ratio has actually come up just a little bit, 18% there. So again, still, like, especially with the length of time that we've been here forming this pattern, it could still take some time for this to actually break to the upside. So while I've been saying that, yeah, this is kind of a bottoming pattern here, at the same time, because it's so long in the tooth, or really maybe long in the tooth wouldn't be quite the right phrase, but because it's been developing for so long, it could take time for a pattern like this to actually start breaking to the upside. So, I do think that that at some point we'll get a decent, strong rebound, and I think that even corroborating that from what we're seeing on Twitter, what we're seeing out in, you know, in the crypto land, the crypto world, we are seeing a few big names here and there start to mention Monero. People with 20, 30, 50,000 followers, sometimes 100,000 followers, mentioning Monero, and we're seeing, like, just in general, apart from the core of laser-eyed, we'll just say people to be nice today. The other people that are more peripherally generally associated with Bitcoin, I'm seeing them open up to Monero. I'm seeing them saying, you know what, maybe, what is this thing again? I don't see the kind of toxicity against Monero except from a sort of core group of laser-eyed maxis. So these are good developments, right? And so, you know, I would definitely think that, I mean, given that our price has already sustained so many attacks in terms of fractional reserve and delisting, I can only imagine that even getting a small influx of people is going to spell good things for price. And you know, it might not be massive, you know, 5x, 10x gains, something like that, right? But overall, what I personally, when it comes to money, when it comes to creating a digital fabric, a digital money, I would much rather see slow, steady adoption and price gains that happen in a slow, steady fashion. That's the kind of thing that enables merchants to accept it. Price stability is something that's important for currency, not mad gains, not like, quote unquote, the falsely called store of value, which is just a thin veil for saying my bag's pumped the most, which actually makes you a speculative asset, not a store of value, because if your bag's pumped the most, but then they also crash a lot, that's not useful for merchants. That's not good money. Money needs to be relatively stable over short periods of time. Ironically, apparently, currency doesn't need to be a store of value over long periods of time, because the dollar's been around for like 100 years or more in its current form, or at least since 1971. And even though it's steadily, slowly losing value to everything because they print it, it holds its value really well over short time frames. So maybe we're even discovering a few new things about what currency needs to be here. You know, as we learn more about the system, about monetary systems, as we watch this fiat experiment unfold before our eyes. Yet I digress. Okay, so we can also take a look at XMR versus Ethereum. Same kind of story. It's also in this kind of very long-term bottoming pattern. We're also looking here with the wave magic turned on, right? These standard deviation bands. At some point, I mean, this thing absolutely should come back to these standard deviation lower bands here, these orange bands. You know, it hasn't, and that's, to me, that's suspect, okay, but whatever. It's going to happen, guys. This thing is going to rebound to the upside here at some point. You know, one thing we forgot to take a look was the wave magic on the Monero US dollar price. I think TradingView made some kind of upgrade, because I'm actually seeing... Oh, of course they want to make me out to be a liar right there. I was just trying to give you praise, TradingView, and then you had to crash my tab. It could be Firefox. It's possible. I've just had problems with Firefox lately. All right. Anyways, yeah, we're kind of occupying these lower standard deviation bands in general. I don't like this price action. In fact, the standard deviation bands would sort of be contradictory in a way towards, like, okay, hypothetically, if we break this, we could still, let me erase that. That's okay. So the lines here, right? The pleb lines, hypothetically, let's suppose we break the pleb lines, but we stay below the standard deviation bands. Hypothetically, that might not be good, in terms of the standard deviation bands, because you'll notice these are already starting to curl down. So hypothetically, as lower standard deviation bands start to curve down, that usually means bad things for price. So I would kind of say these two technical analysis metrics, if you will, I would say they're kind of contradictory right now. So, again, I don't trade Monero, and this is one of the reasons why. I've just seen Monero's chart is dirty. The wave, like when we look at the wave magic on larger timeframes,
the chart looks dirty. It doesn't look clean. I've just seen too many times where the technical analysis just doesn't work out. So I generally just stay away from trading Monero. It's useful. I use it, you know, and that's what we're supposed to be doing here with digital freedom money. Okay, the price divergences, not really anything here to speak of. Poloniex is still, you know, doing their stupid shit. But hey, that's what Justin Sun likes to do, apparently. And we'll take a look, actually, you know, why don't we just look at it now? We'll be a bit schizophrenic today. This darker green line, that's TRX. That's Tron. That's the Justin Sun coin. And he's been doing very good for like the past week. So, I guess, you know, cheers to all those people that love Tron, which apparently include maximalists since they love Tether so much. And since Tether trades primarily on Tron and Ethereum. Okay. Back to Monero. Actually, you know what? There's probably not much more here to talk about with Monero. I guess we look at the market cap dominance, but I don't like looking at this chart because it makes me cry. So, yeah, we'll just look at that and call it a day, at least for the price stuff on Monero. Okay, so let's take a look at the transaction counts. Here was where the attack happened, and we're basically back down to baseline, which is about 25,000 transactions. So I was kind of hoping that our baseline would sort of resolve closer to 30, you know, because we're saying, hey, Binance delisted, people are using different platforms, you know, we're having to do more on-chain transactions. And I guess if we were to look at sort of the longer term, in fact, why don't we do this? Let's take a look at the simple moving average. And I like to look at the 30-day moving average. Maybe that's a bit too long of a time frame. So we had this, you know, yeah, that is too long of a time frame. Okay. You can see that we are slowly still increasing on these transaction counts. We came down, especially in January 2023, just after the end of the bear market, right? Like just after that started ending, that's when we started our uptrend in the transactions. So we are still higher. In fact, our transaction counts are currently at about the same level that they were during the bull market last time. So I guess that's pretty good, especially considering that our prices are nowhere near all-time highs. So we are, like, despite the fact that our prices aren't near all-time highs, we're still doing the same levels of transactions and much greater, actually, than we did back during the bull market. And what I guess much greater, maybe we shouldn't include the little attack there that happened. Or maybe not an attack, just stress testing. That's what I'm going to call it from now on, stress testing. Let's see, hash rate. Let's take a look at hash rate. It looks like we're continuing to fall a little bit on hash rate. Not sure what would be driving this or why this would be happening. But, okay, it is what it is. I'm sure probably someone out there has some smart ideas about why this is happening. This chart wasn't... Oh, okay, good. So we're still looking at about 22,000 nodes globally. I think it's pretty cool that, you know, just 6 months ago, 9 months ago, this thing was closer to 12,000. So, I don't know. With the stress test of the network, hypothetically, could this be an attempt to defeat... drawing a blank here, to defeat our IP address masking. How could I forget what that's called? I guess it's early in the morning, guys. Give me a break. Anyways, I hope these are all organic nodes. I would wonder, hey, shouldn't hash power have gone up with this? So I do raise an eyebrow a little bit at having 22,000 nodes when we used to have 12,000 on this chart. Maybe it's just an artifact of the way the data is collected. Maybe they changed the way the data is collected. Let's see, where can we find these graphs, Bowdy Anarchist? Okay, let me copy the link here and I'll drop it into the chat. That's MoneroMap.fail. And then Monero transaction counts. Okay. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So yeah, I guess that's wrapping it up for a quick look there at Monero. And why don't we just take a look at Bitcoin? So looking at the daily candles here, you'll notice we sort of fell from the underside of this line. Honestly, this really isn't as like terrible as it looks. What we can do, I guess we'll keep that line down there just for reference. What we can do is just kind of extend that a little bit. I would probably expect things to try and resolve later on in the summer, maybe towards August or something, or maybe towards July. I kind of have the feeling that this chart's going to break to the upside, but I'm not confident that it's going to yield any major gains. Like I don't expect Bitcoin to go to 100K anytime soon. Maybe if some negative thing happens and the intervention is made, which that's not going to happen. But I just don't see any way that Bitcoin gets there. Bitcoin currently has everything going for it. It's got the ETFs. It had the halving. It's got the NFTs and the memes. The degenerates are on chain now. And everyone's like come to party in Bitcoin. And even their testnet now with runes had actually had value on their testnet. People were trading Bitcoin for value on the testnet, which is kind of hilarious because was it one of our devs? I think it was RBRunner7. He wrote I should have pulled this up for just to prepare for RBRunner7 wrote a fiction story about launching a testnet in Monero and then creating value out of that testnet as his shitcoin, but it was just a Monero testnet. And then that fiction actually became reality in the Bitcoin world. Really, really hilarious. Okay, Mr. Anderson, you're asking about the price charts. Okay. This is all on TradingView, tradingview.com. So you can get the free service, which you can only put one or maybe three indicators. You just sign up for an account. And you can put one or three indicators, but these charts that I'm using, actually, let's go to Monero versus gold, because why not? So this right here, all the Wave Magic stuff that I'm talking about, technically speaking, this is something like eight indicators at once. Yeah, this is eight different indicators overlaid on the same chart to produce this chart. And then each of these indicators has something like 64 lines. So, we're looking at 500 lines on this chart to make this a reality. And to do that, you need you need higher levels of subscriptions to add more indicators to charts. I will probably at some point, make this Wave Magic indicator available for people. But that time is not right now. So, but yeah, all these charts you can find on tradingview.com. So, tradingview.com. So let's see. All right. Going back to Bitcoin. Let's take a look at the shorter time frame. And we'll turn on the Wave Magic as well. It looks colorful. It looks cool. And I do think the standard deviations have been very useful for myself in making decisions. Again, one thing that I've told you guys a lot, and I'll keep telling you, keep reminding you, you cannot use any one technical indicator as your trading god. You can't use that as the ideal thing. This is the thing. I know how cool and colorful and awesome the Wave Magic looks, but this doesn't work all the time. It generally tends to work, and patterns and themes come out at you. But if you want to be successful at buying and selling rather than just hodling, you need to corroborate different signals together, and it needs to be more than just technical analysis. It's great when all of the technical analysis stuff lines up together, and that's usually a pretty strong signal when that happens, but you also want to corroborate that with the fundamentals happening in the market and the hype cycles and the news cycles, and you need to corroborate that against the global liquidity situation as well. Like what's the Fed doing? Are they printing more? Are they printing less, et cetera? So if you want to be successful, my suggestion is throw as little amount of time doing any actual trading. Spend most of your time just being familiar with the markets and look for when things all kind of line up and point the same direction. So right now, in terms of the Wave Magic, yeah, it looks like Bitcoin hit some key levels right here. They're not key levels. Maybe they're more like minor levels. But this was kind of an area that you would say, hey, maybe we could be looking at some kind of temporary bottom. And now Bitcoin is getting back into the lower standard deviation bands. And hypothetically, if it can balance out here and not take another big drop, if it was able to do that, that would give you a little bit more bullish feelings on how that price action is unfolding. And in a lot of cases, technical analysis, you're drawing all this stuff and you're trying to understand how is price action unfolding. Sometimes you can just look at the price action and have the intuition of just knowing man, this is weak. This does not look like strong price action. So in a lot of cases, you're just better off not trading, looking at the markets, being aware of what's going on, getting a really good feel for how things look, getting the intuition for it, and then making the occasional move. That's really if you want to trade, that is what I would recommend getting started. I would not recommend trying to learn how to day trade. I know how alluring that can seem. I know it's but look at all these movements. If I just bought here and sold here and bought here and sold here, I'd make all this money, and it just almost never unfolds that way. A very, very few brilliant chads can make that happen. But I'm not one of them, right? I have done some short-term trading. I've done the leverage thing. I don't like it. I don't do good at it. Even when I've been right, I've still gotten wrecked on leverage trading. So probably, trading a little bit too much leverage. Luckily, I'm only using little bits. Was only using small amounts, relatively speaking. So, okay. Yeah, I guess there's nothing really interesting going on here. Price is just churning, waiting. Maybe we take a look at the weekly on Bitcoin just to get a slight idea, of a bigger, of the broader picture of what's going on here. I mean, so far you'd look at this and you'd say, okay, that is a pretty long.
Looks like we lost that graph.
Oh, did we?
All right. Yeah, I lost the graphs.
Oh, my tab died. Man, why are my tabs all die?
It's not like a new jail.
Man, I don't know like what happened. I don't know if it was an update, but maybe I need to go to an older, different version of Firefox. Okay. How about now?
Got it.
Okay. Okay. We're looking here at the sort of the longer-term charts on Bitcoin. So this has been kind of a sustained pullback. It's not terrible. Like, I wouldn't say that the fat lady sung on this chart by any means, but you'll notice, like, this line down here, like, this is kind of your overall, like, uptrend line, right? It's not necessarily at the bottom. It's not necessarily at the top. We've been under it before. This is kind of, we were following along that line, and then things just pumped to the upside. So things really, for a little bit, they really got out of hand after the ETF release and then the hype for the halving. It would make a lot of sense to come back to this line and then try and spend some time trying to make another high, another all-time high. As we talked about before, like this monthly close, this candle right here, this monthly April candle, that's weakness. You know, we talk about watching the way in which price action unfolds. That's weakness. Like, we really need a May close to be higher than this candle right here, because it's every other all-time high break has been higher, has broken with momentum. So not breaking with momentum here, it's not necessarily that it's like that it spells doom and it spells another bear market. It's just that it tells you what we already know, that Bitcoin is having diminishing returns and that you're going to get less and less gains, less and less mad gains going into the future. So that's just how it works with small cap assets that become big cap assets. Like, it takes more and more liquidity, takes more and more hyper Bitcoinization to get yourself, you know, to $1 million Bitcoin. And that's just not how money and markets work. So Bitcoin's already entered diminishing returns. You're going to see it more and more. The salt on Twitter will inevitably be glorious. So, you know, look for that. That'll be fun. We can look at Bitcoin dominance real quick. Yeah. So this thing still basically in this big channel that we kind of ad hoc drew last week on the charts, that line and this line. I tend to think this chart also feels a little bit like weakness. It's already, you know, it's rolling over a little bit. Hypothetically, we could draw another little line like that, you know. And so, for example, we're just move on. We'll just forget about that. I wanted to look at some of the other privacy coins today as well. So Xano has like very, very low liquidity at the moment, which I think is that's good. Like, if you want coins that could potentially go up a lot, low liquidity is good, and especially a project like Xano that's respected by the Monero community and is doing interesting things. And, you know, Zoidberg, like you guys have mentioned before, like Doug has mentioned before and had him on the show, like, this guy was an OG, like one of the original Monero guys that helped to develop the protocol. So he's developing Xano. I don't want to shill it or anything, but I guess I just kind of did.
they will be at Monerotopia again this year, which is awesome. So excited for that. That is all.
What happened?
Uh-oh.
Nope. Did we lose body?
Did we lose body? It's very possible.
Enough. Body!
He's having some computer troubles today.
All right. Well, the Xano team will be at Monerotopia, which is very cool.
That is very cool.
Interesting that body was bringing him up. Curious what he was going to end up saying. But maybe we will get him back. Should we move on, Tux? What do you think?
Let's go ahead and move on, I guess, to the go to the guest segment.
Let's do it. Oh, we just got word that Luke Parker will be able to jump on.
He's in the backstage right now.
So super exciting. We'll get Luke up here, but first, let's go to our special guest this week. Very excited to get to learn about Wizard Swap. Let's do it.
The Monerotopia guest segment is sponsored by CakeWallet. Store, send, receive, and exchange your Monero and Bitcoin safely on iOS and Android too. Cake Wallet is open source, and you always control your own keys.
Hello, hello.
Hello, how's it going today? Happy to be on. Thank you so much for reaching out and inviting me.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for sponsoring Monerotopia.
Appreciate that. I'm super happy to come on board as one of the sponsors of this very cool opportunity to be a part of it.
Very cool. Yeah, we like to be a little picky and choosy with who our sponsors are, and you guys reached out to us, and we were taking a look, and you look like you're offering a pretty decent service here, a way for people to it's an instant exchange, correct? A way for people to swap in and out between Monero and other cryptos.
Correct. So it's a non-custodial exchange. There's a bunch of them out there. and just easy way to primarily swap Monero with other privacy coins as well as Bitcoin and Ethereum.
How long have you guys been around?
So initially, we kind of launched in 2020 Wizard Swap as a kind of call or response rather to some geolocation restrictions that Bittrex had placed on Particle community. So to help make sure that anyone could get access to that technology, I had another kind of local Bitcoin clone, localparticle.com running, and I figured I could reuse the current infrastructure to and you know help people do direct crypto-to-crypto exchanges. And I've just been adding additional privacy coins and whatnot and just really trying to support the privacy community. It's clearly a large demand and an ever-increasing demand.
100%. Yeah, people are looking for ways to get in and out of Monero from other cryptos for sure. And instant exchanges are currently one of the best ways to do it. We're kind of between this in-between time where we're getting booted from traditional centralized exchanges, but we don't yet have a really good way of getting in and out of Monero to other cryptos in a decentralized way. We have a lot of ways in the works.
Absolutely.
We have, yep, Sarai that's going to be coming up. We have Havino. You can do atomic swaps right now, but it's like not super user friendly. So the kind of the best way right now to get in and out of Monero into other cryptos is to use instant exchanges, right? I think that is probably the most popular way these days, or maybe some non-KYC exchanges that exist out there. But I think instant exchanges have really kind of become the place for people to go to where they get enough ease of use that they can do it, and they're also not being KYC'd. And they're really not taking a large risk because it's an instant swap. You're not leaving any crypto on an exchange. You're getting your crypto as soon as you send the crypto that you have. All right. Any comments, thoughts on that?
Yeah. So exactly. You know, being able to not use an exchange is obviously ideal for as short a time as possible. I'm sure at this point, many of us here have been burned by an exchange a time or two. So not leaving your keys there, certainly ideal. And, you know, and then also what we do is we run our own nodes and whatnot. So liquidity is provided by our members, and then we give them a share of each exchange. So we don't tie into any centralized exchanges whatsoever. And it seems right now, you know, basically all Bitcoin, if they're not coming directly from some kind of KYC exchange, are, you know, not that fungible right now. It kind of might be looking that way. So we really need this other ways to make sure that our coins stay fungible.
What type of, can you give us any insight into the type of the volumes you see, or maybe comparisons between coins, like what your most popular coins are?
Sure. So our most popular coin is definitely Monero, happy to say. You know, Bitcoin and Monero pairs, probably Ethereum after that. But people are definitely wanting Ethereum, and we're actually having a hard time keeping it in stock as of the past few weeks, especially post-Binance delisting. People really can't get enough, it seems. So we're really happy to work with a few liquidity providers and really try to bring as much Monero to the people as we can.
Amazing, man. That's good to hear. I mean, what can you give us any insight into what like the volume of transactions are for Monero?
Probably I'd say I'll give a rough estimate of a few thousand a day right now. So not okay. Huge, but you know, it's not nothing.
Now, so you know, there are a bunch of different instant exchanges out there. Some are a little different in different ways. I like the, you know, the fact that you guys are no JavaScript, right? I think you're accessible by Kenmore.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Right? We are quite cool. We have an Onion 3, so please use it.
So how would you compare to some of the other instant exchanges out there? What are the things that you guys do differently that other ones aren't doing? Or, you know, sell us on that.
Okay, sure. You're just guaranteed to not ever have your coins locked. We're going to make sure that if you do an exchange, we will fill your order. And we've made a few changes, so now we had the rate locked as soon as you made the exchange, basically indefinitely, but there were a few potential attack vectors there. So now we lock in your rate once we get one confirmation, and we've been able to kind of keep liquidity moving a lot faster that way. And so I don't know, I've tried to use a couple exchanges recently, other swap things, and I've definitely had a few little issues with trying to use Bitcoin. It's been hard. Yeah.
HBS is asking, where does WizardSwap get its liquidity from?
Well, we get it from our members. So if you have Monero or Bitcoin that you want to exchange or help provide it, you can create an account and add some into a wallet there and provide liquidity, and you get a cut of each trade, basically.
Oh, okay. Can you explain that a little more?
Sure. Yeah. So the liquidity is provided directly by our members, our users. So we have a group of people on the back end that anyone can join. So there's a little login or sign up link at the bottom, and you can create an account, deposit your coins in there, and then go ahead and configure what coins you'd like to swap to. So you can just swap to, say, Monero and Bitcoin if you want, and then you can basically just leave those coins in your account, and as users need one or the other, they'll just swap back and forth, and you'll get a percentage of that trade.
So there is a little bit of a risk there, I guess, for liquidity.
Yes. Yeah, there is, and we have a little disclaimer above each wallet there before you deposit that you certainly could be at risk of market volatility, obviously.
Right, and you're ultimately trusting wizards with you.
Yeah, and of course, and your coins are they're custodial suddenly now, right? So you certainly are at risk, so don't put anything more than you're willing to lose. I would recommend, of course, as with any exchanging or whatnot.
Are there a lot of instant exchanges doing that in the background in terms of liquidity? I mean, I think a lot of them are just going to, getting it from, a lot of them are getting it from like Binance, right, ultimately. But
yeah.
This way in which you're doing it, is that popular for instant exchanges?
As far as I know, we're the only ones with this model out there.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Guys, throw some questions up here. This is, how's the slippage at the moment?
So, we're not an automated market maker. So basically there's just a flat global average. So right now we use, CoinGecko and CoinMarketCap, and we create a global average every few minutes. And then we have between, depending on like a 2.2% rate up to 10% for a really low liquidity coin that doesn't have much movement. You know, and we do that to make sure no one can dump and manipulate markets on other exchanges.
Francisco is asking, how do you do risk management for balancing between different positions?
Well, so as far as that kind of stuff, it's kind of up to our liquidity providers to handle that. I'm busy with just handling the infrastructure here and making sure things happen and handling support. So all the liquidity and any of that stuff is kind of hands off and up to our liquidity providers.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm just reading through to see.
Yeah, this is really, this comments. Is very unique. I don't think I've seen an instant exchange have a model like this. And I do really appreciate the fact that you guys don't have like shotgun KYC. Like there's a site called KYCnot.me that I've used for a long time, and it provides info on lots of exchanges, and you guys have high marks on there. Because there's a lot of instant exchanges. There's a lot.
Sure.
And there's a lot that support Monero, but most of them have some level of potential shotgun KYC. And some of them let you withdraw. Some of them, your coins could end up getting locked. But this one looks pretty cool.
And I'd say also, we've worked with orangefriend.com. And if you have any concerns about using our site, we do have a little bit of a guarantee, basically a bond with them. So you can use through them and use the referral link, and you get a little bit of extra protection. If you're new to us, you can give us a shot, and now they got your back too.
Oh, that's it.
That's cool that I can just put some of my existing like liquidity into there and make little bits off of it with fees. Pretty awesome.
Now, you know, I gotta ask kind of the tough questions, and the answers as you wish, but How are you guys dealing with the growing regulation that's coming down? Like, what are you guys thinking about that? Is that something you're concerned about? Or
absolutely. Obviously, the past week or so, we've had some events happen. So privacy has continued to rise as a higher priority, and OPSEC and whatnot. So we're just being very careful and watching things as we come. But, you know, right now, there's only two countries in the world with cryptocurrency as legal tender. And we're keeping an eye on where the best places to safest places to be, basically. And we'll watch the industry unfold.
Do you think they may try to shut down
No. A certain three-letter agency certainly released a paper, which sounded like they would like to target them, perhaps. Hopefully this isn't the case, and we can keep on operating and providing privacy to the people. And, you know, otherwise we might just have to find out other ways to go about this. And we'll definitely need to go to DEXs and whatnot if it'll force us basically to go to DEXs and force development if the hand gets too heavy this direction. So that'd be fine too.
Exactly. Life will find a way. Monero will find a way. But right now, these instant exchanges are probably the best way in terms of combining ease of use with privacy and not having to KYC. So right now, it's a boom time for using instant exchanges. And as Tux was saying, WizardSwap is ranked high in terms of people trusting it and what it offers. And so, you know, very, very happy to have them as new sponsor to Monerotopia. So thank you so much, man. Thanks for jumping on and telling us about it and answering questions. I know that's something that definitely helps people get comfortable with using a service, getting to speak with the people running it, ask their questions. So appreciate you guys jumping on.
I really appreciate the invite. Maybe I'll be back again. Thanks.
Anything you want to close out with? Anything you want to get out there that we didn't cover?
Well, I guess I'd just be interested in getting some user feedback for things to, you know, add and support or change. I just really, really like to hear any community feedback, and I'm definitely here. Email me, get the Simplex link, and chat with me. I'm here to listen to feedback and help make it a better ecosystem.
So you guys have an API? Maybe
we
sure
do.
Wallet integrations that could be made.
So I see in the chat here, someone asked about Cake Wallet integration, and we are on Trocador, and they are integrated with Cake, I believe. So we kind of are already available through Cake.
Oh, great. I didn't know you guys were already on Trocador. That's awesome. So yeah, there you go, guys. You can already use WizardSwap and Cake. We may have to add a filter so you can... Oh, nope, it's already there. Never mind. So if you want to use just WizardSwap and Cake right now, you can go to the privacy settings on Cake Wallet and tap on Trocador providers and turn all the other ones off and leave just WizardSwap. And that'll use only WizardSwap. But maybe eventually we can get WizardSwap directly integrated as a standalone.
Oh, I'd be happy to reach out to the Cake Wallet team and see about that.
Tux, maybe we integrate this into XMR Bazaar.
Oh, yeah, potentially, as like a quick swap.
Yeah, let me know. I'd be happy to help out with any kind of integration you need.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for jumping on. Feel free to stick around if you can.
We'll do.
All right, very, very cool. And maybe we see you down at Monerotopia. I guess we wouldn't know, right?
Maybe not. We'll find out.
All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, stick around if you can. We'll move to our second special guest of the day, a surprise visit from Luke Parker. So let's bring him up quick. We'll do that before the news.
Luke, how are you doing?
Hey, can you all hear me?
Yeah.
How's it going,
great,
man?
Good. Just been working a bit.
Yeah, looks like you've been very busy and productive.
Yeah, past month. Been a whirlwind.
So give us I went through we were trying to go through the tweet thread this morning, but basically tell us what you were trying to say in that tweet thread. Explain to everybody what your thoughts were there in terms of where we're at with full chain membership proofs.
Yeah, sure. So my main comment was that I am personally amazed at how much development has come out of this in, you know, just the past month or so. And that's not completely unexpected, because one of the things I was complimenting was JAMTIS and how this JAMTIS Ring CT proposal, or JAMTIS FCMP Ring CT proposal, however you want to call it. The point is, the latest JAMTIS proposal, JAMTIS being originally new addresses for Ring CT, are originally intended to be new addresses for Ring CT. Then it was to become the sole address format for Seraphis. And now what we're discussing is a new send protocol and new address. So that means if you have an existing address, use the existing sending protocol. If you have a new address, you use the same, or sorry, slipped up there. If you have an old address, you use the JAMTIS sending protocol. If you have a new address, you still use the JAMTIS sending protocol, and it just varies slightly depending on if it's an old or new address. So because we're updating how we send to these addresses, no matter what, there are some differences in, you know, functionality, performance, et cetera, et cetera. But we are still discussing two different address types, the existing addresses and the new addresses, and new addresses will be more fully featured. So one of the things I'm talking about is how it's great that JAMTIS added these features to the full chain membership proof over Ring CT proposal. But I do have to fully caveat, most of JAMTIS was developed for Seraphis. So on the one hand, I'm excited about how there's been all this progress in about a month. Yeah, sure, part of it's progress, if you want to get down into it. Part of it may or may not just be the fact that a lot of the work to Seraphis also applies to it, and I'm just claiming it as the development of the most recent month. But I think the reason why I'm so excited about it is because all of this functionality that was being proposed for Seraphis, which would have been a hard migration, is now being applied to Ring CT and invalidating the need to migrate. There are still reasons we could discuss wanting to migrate, of course. But basically, the past month has just been a ton of developments on full chain membership proof, on removing their reliance on Seraphis, and on finding out what's the limits of the Ring CT system we currently have.
Amazing, man. And it just seems like there's been a series of kind of like Easter eggs found along the way, where it's like, oh, it's also going to help us do this, and it's going to help us do that. Could we potentially expect some more things that we're going to learn as we proceed? Ways in which this will ultimately change how Monero functions?
We might be kind of at the limit here. I mean, okay. One of the things that was most recent is how we get a bit more efficiency if we redefine key images. But that doesn't add any new functionality. It's just a detail of how we implement all of this. So I'm not saying that there won't be more performance that we shake out of it. But at this point, it's feature complete with Seraphis. JAMTIS would apply to either Seraphis or to this proposal. And sorry, there was one other aspect I wanted to go over. Oh, and the existing addresses we currently use would still be usable in the future. And not only would they still be usable in the future, they would upgrade to have mitigations to the Janus attack. For those who don't know, the Janus attack is when you see two different addresses on the internet, and you can't tell if they belong to the same person. But you can send a payment to those addresses in a way that does tell you if they are, in fact, owned by the same person. So it lets you craft these malicious payments that de-anonymize the owner a bit. It lets you link their addresses together. So a mitigation to the Janus attack means that, no, you cannot, in fact, figure out if two addresses are owned by the same person in such a manner. So upgrading existing addresses to mitigate against the Janus attack is honestly quite amazing. I'm incredibly surprised that's possible. And then also adding forward secrecy to them is great. It means the existing Monero addresses, ignoring main addresses, so still have one caveat, but the existing Monero addresses will be just as private as the new address we're proposing deploying. It's just the new address will solely have more functionality. So when we've already kind of maximized privacy, we've hit all of these great efficiency benchmarks, and we have all of these features, I'm not really sure there's much left to shake out of the tree.
Come on, Luke, give me more juice. Amazing, man.
I'll let you know when we actually get negative verification time. So verifying Monero transactions will actually make your computer faster. I'll let you know when we get there, but we're not there quite yet.
You're working on it. How are we looking in terms of, you know, whether or not this thing is actually going to work, right? Like it's still up in the air, right? We're still waiting for things to be proven. We're not 100% certain that this can all work as designed. Is that correct?
Yeah. So a lot of the design, it's not proven yet, and I'm not going to claim it's proven yet, but a lot of the design you can simply look at and simply say, yes, this all makes sense and should work. The only two things that we weren't saying that about was one, generalized bulletproof, even though I personally had a high degree of confidence in that. And then beyond generalized bulletproof, it's the elliptic curve divisors we're currently using. Elliptic curve divisors are a bunch of fancy math and numbers, but the point of all of these fancy math and numbers is a lot of the efficiency we've gotten out of this proof. So it was actually posted yesterday that we have received security proofs for generalized bulletproof from Aaron over at CypherStack. So generalized bulletproof is now proven, and that's one of the kind of main two hurdles here out of the way. The other is divisors, and that is actually something I've reached out to multiple audit firms about. And with that kind of reaching out, it's something I hope to have an answer on very soon. They do already have a somewhat of a proof. When the divisors technique was published, the author, Liam Egan, they did publish why this works and why it's correct and how it's infeasible to forge a divisor as per the discussion. So there already is all of this commentary on divisors and their security. It's more mathematically there's these limitations and these properties. But what Egan did not do is describe a literal protocol for it. They did not write out, you know, the exact hash functions used. And I don't know the best way to say this in layman's terms, because honestly, if you're writing down a protocol, you shouldn't specify the exact hash functions used. But my point is that Egan, they did write commentary on the security. They were not potentially as thorough as we may want. So that's the current task, is just getting additional review on it, and not only getting additional review, but having our specific implementation confirmed to be proper. And I've already reached out to multiple groups about that, and I'm hoping that we can have a very quick timeline on that moving forward, partially thanks to the fact that we already have the funds for audit and review all lined up and ready.
Amazing, man. Is there anything we can do? Is there anything else we can do to help? I know you fully funded both the CCSs. But what else can the community do, people do, anybody do to kind of help provide resources?
I think it's really just about getting the right people involved, not more people involved. A couple things I do want to clarify, though, while I have the opportunity and platform. I like to call it Seraphis the protocol versus Seraphis the code base, though there's a ton of ways you can draw the lines and be specific. But Seraphis was meant to enable technology such as full-chain membership proof via changing the internal structure, via changing exactly how the math works. And I'm not here to disparage the protocol, because it's what we initially kind of discussed as this viable, let's implement this thing in order to achieve stuff such as full-chain membership proof. And that only worked because, honestly, the Seraphis protocol is a better design than our current RingCT protocol. The issue with it is that it required the shard migration, and that was deemed acceptable because the path to full privacy is more important than a one-time migration. With all of this, we no longer have to do the migration or full chain privacy. We can skip the migration or get full chain privacy. With this, we can skip the migration and get full chain privacy.
Amazing.
So if the research on this whole and development goes at the expected pace, I would expect it to be deployed before Seraphis. And if the research on it holds, I personally am unsure Seraphis, the migration and the protocol makes sense. Mm-hmm. But all of the work that's been done on Seraphis hasn't just been done on all of this math and numbers. It's also been on building a cleaner Monero code base. It's also been on building Monero transaction formats. It's also been building a new scanner for finding outputs. That's one of the things Berman's been working on. And even for RingCT outputs, like 40% faster. So Seraphis, the code base, has a lot of great work. And even if this supersedes, you know, Seraphis, the protocol, this new way of defining outputs and managing inputs and passing through all of these numbers, I do hope and expect Seraphis, the code base, will still be deployed. So I do want to clarify, this doesn't replace Seraphis entirely. Ideally, it just replaces the fact that we prior needed a migration. But Seraphis, the code base, and all the work that's put into it would still be deployed.
Okay. What kind of, what are the hot topics now in the research lab with regards to, I mean, obviously all these things you're talking about, but like, what's kind of maybe some of the pushback that you might be seeing on some of the ideas, vision that you have for where things can be headed with full chain membership proof?
I largely kind of think people are just waiting to see what shakes out. I really think I've captured Tevador's interest, which not only am I very happy about just because it's someone else's interest, but I appreciate, you know, Tevador specifically and all of the work they do for the community. Though, when it comes to will full chain membership proofs work out as we hope and expect, a lot of people, I believe, are waiting to see, which is completely fair. I was the one expected to do this development, and that's my active work. It's on doing this development. And if I can get this development done, that'll be great. I'm not really sure at this time more people would be helpful there. So because more people isn't really necessary for writing the proofs themselves, I haven't had a need to, you know, get the community together and say, hey, I need 10 Monero devs over here and 5 more over here. So yeah, right now I think Monero had work prior and Monero still has work. It's just now it digitally has this work regarding full chain membership proofs. So I think for, you know, most Monero development, it's just continuing as it prior did. It's just I now personally am also working on Monero again.
Rupix asked the million-dollar question. Will full-chain membership proofs mitigate the 20-minute wait time versus reorg? It's the one that I've always been asking Co. How do we fix this? Is there any way to ever solve this?
Prior, I said it had no impact. And technically, there is some impact, but practically, I wouldn't say there's impact. The 20-minute lock, in my opinion, is mainly there for security. And all of those same security comments apply to full-chain membership proofs. Full-chain membership proofs don't magically solve them. There are a couple trade-off enables, and it's less disastrous to remove the 10-block lock, but that doesn't change the security issues.
What would change the security for those that are trying to understand this? What
would change them?
Yeah, what advancement needs to happen in Monero? That's the only...
I'm not saying that's ever going to happen. I'm saying if you want to have finality, and you want to have finality that's less than 20 minutes, practically you would be looking for a proof-of-stake system that... I mean, like, even Zcash is discussing proof-of-stake. And what they're doing, I actually quite like their design. They call it a trailing finality layer. So they still have proof of work, and proof of work miners still produce blocks and they still extend the chain. But after, like, say, half an hour goes by, a proof of stake collective finalizes the block, and that prevents reorganization. So if you're, you know, receiving, you know, $100 million and you want to be absolutely certain, you don't have to wait a week. You just have to wait 30 minutes until this proof of stake committee produces the finalization. And I think it's a really great design that kind of gets the best security of both proof of work and proof of stake. And there are, you know, discussions and caveats to that. But I do like their design, even if I'm not here to endorse it for Monero. But what I'm forced to note is they're discussing a 20 to 30 minute delay. And they're discussing that because they're preserving the proof of work element in their design. If we were to move to, say, Tendermint, which is used by all of these Cosmos SDK chains, we would have 6-second blocks with 6-second finality. Great. So that requires we move to proof of stake. And I don't believe Monero is going to move to proof of stake. And effectively, all designs that need finality are going to be proof of stake and eliminate proof of work. So because we can't eliminate chain reorganizations without finality, and the only practical way to achieve finality on a short term is proof of stake, and because Monero won't adopt proof of stake, I don't believe this issue is going away. What we should instead is mitigation. Sorry.
Okay. Now, as you say, Andre from Zano believes that Monero will one day be proof of stake, which I thought that's one of the predictions he made at Monerotopia. Were you? Did we have you on the panel, the proof of stake versus proof of work panel last year? Were you on there?
I remember being on a panel. I'm not sure with that one.
We may have to redo the proof of work versus proof of stake and get you up there with Andre.
To be clear, I actually don't mind proof of stake personally, and I think there's a lot of good reasons for it. I don't believe Monero should become proof of stake, but in general, I do believe in proof of stake consensus. It just obviously depends on exactly what you're looking for. If you're looking for the utmost in decentralization, sure, proof of work. Though with Sarai, a corruption decentralized exchange, finality is something extremely critical. Because if we, you know, intend to send Bitcoin somewhere, and then Sarai has a reorganization and we're no longer supposed to send Bitcoin somewhere, we can't help Bitcoin give us back that Bitcoin. So the concept of finality is critical to Sarai, which is why it's proof of stake. I think Ethereum being proof of stake makes a lot of sense. I think if you want a lot of user safety and a lot of simplicity in user experience, proof of stake is a good design, and it can also be very efficient. But yes, it does sacrifice on decentralization. And as I believe Monero should strive to be the most decentralized possible, I believe Monero should remain on proof of work.
All right. Yeah, I'm picturing the panel. We got to get you on the proof of work versus proof of stake panel with Andre and Arctic. Arctic is obviously a very big proof of work advocate. I don't think he would ever be swayed in the other direction. But what are these other ways that we could possibly mitigate that you're referencing?
Yeah, so a couple of things. The big idea would be payment channels. Those will effectively sacrifice privacy. And that's not an issue if they're literally peer-to-peer. With the Lightning model, you have the hub-and-spoke model. Instead of, you know, me sending to you, Doug, I send to the Monerotopia server, and then that sends to you. If you actually have peer-to-peer payment channels, you no longer have to be worried about the privacy of it, because, oh no, the person you're sending money to knows you're sending them money. So one of the great things about transaction chaining being the ability to create a transaction that spends an output that hasn't been included on chain yet. So I can say, I'll send money to this multisig address if and only if this multisig will then assign a transaction spending this money in a very specific way. You cannot do that with current Monero. Any transaction you sign, all inputs already have to be on chain. So I'd be forced to send money to the multisig before it can agree to make that transaction. And that breaks some protocol design. So one of the things transaction chaining gives us is some payment channel protocol. And we can have a much more viable payment channels on Monero discussion, which would not have a 20-minute lock, but would lock your funds into a specific channel. So that's a different set of trade-offs and something to consider. The other option...
Other benefits we would get there if we went in that direction as well, right?
Okay. Yeah, it also decreased fees for all the payments within the channel. The other option would be to discuss layer two. And I guess you could technically say sidechains, even though I don't personally believe in the sidechain model. The issue, of course, there being is that Monero does not support layer two. But I think the discussion to add some form of layer two to Monero is a far more viable discussion than discussing adding proof of stake to Monero. Not to say technically, I think one of those is much harder. Dano has added proof of stake to a Monero-esque code base. Zano isn't using the Monero code base, they're using the CryptoNote code base. So I do have to acknowledge that. I just also don't want to claim that Monero is actively a CryptoNote code base due to all the work we've done with RingCT and so on. Regardless,
you're saying Zano has added... Monero isn't a CryptoNote?
I don't personally appreciate calling Monero CryptoNote since it deployed RingCT.
Okay.
If you want to go to any CryptoNote fork, not to say that they couldn't also have independently evolved. Zano has recently added amount privacy. But CryptoNote was notorious for not hiding amounts and using denomination. Monero hasn't shown amounts and not used denominations in several years now, thanks to RingCT. Personally, I feel calling Monero a CryptoNote, calling Monero CryptoNote disregards all of the work Monero has done. I personally say Monero forked CryptoNote and is now Monero. I'm not trying to hide the fact we were originally based on CryptoNote.
You're starting a movement here today. I know this is going to change things.
Said this. I'm not saying Monero didn't for CryptoNote. I just don't instance of CryptoNote. Oh, sorry. I think my Bluetooth earbuds just disconnected. Oh, because I'm getting a phone call. Sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
Doug,
Nope.
Great.
Okay. Sorry about that. I got a phone call and it beeped.
Word okay. No, you're good now. You're good now.
Yeah. I just wouldn't call Monero actively crypto note. I would call it a fork of crypto note that's independently evolved. And that only heightens when we're discussing therapists and the new transaction types and so on. And that only heightens when we're discussing full chain membership groups, which don't even use rings anymore. But regardless, Dano has integrated proof of stake. And with that, they kind of show what a path forward based on proof of stake would be like. Adding layer twos would require some form of settlement functionality on Monero, such as smart contracts. And that is a much more difficult discussion. But I think the community would be more receptive to some form of settlement, if it's private, than proof of stake in anything.
That makes sense. Underhausen is saying, what does Luke think about the Paymo payment channels for Monero paper that was released? Go ahead.
Paymo requires transaction chaining, so it's not possible with Monero prior to Seraphis or full chain membership proof. Personally, I don't love it because it requires proof of work puzzles to secure themselves, and I don't appreciate that model. You basically have to set a deadline on the channel, and then you have to spend a week devoting computational hash power to the channel if you want to force close it. You have to spend a week mining away at the key to force close it. And the issue is that because your counterparty can be mining it from day zero to obtain this private key that can force close the channel, you have to assume that the channel will be closed in a week and the channel is only valid for that 1 week. And then the further issue is you have to assume your counterparty has a top-of-the-line GPU and can close the channel in 1 week at the specification, but in reality, your counterparty may be on a mobile phone and it might take them several weeks of work to close the channel. So because of the discrepancy in computing hardware and the fact that you have to handle the worst case, I don't personally believe in proof of work-based designs like that.
All right. We got a bunch of people tuning in on Twitter and on YouTube. Guys, like and share this. Very pleasant surprise. Luke willing to jump up on after short notice when I hit him up. And he's obviously super, 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 super busy guy. Luke, man, greatly appreciated. I don't want to waste any more of your time. Obviously, you're welcome to stick around.
Yeah, happy to. Yeah. I can stick around for a bit longer.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Luke will stick around a little bit, and we'll jump into the news, and then we'll bring viewers up on stage. If people have questions for Luke and for WizardSwap, we'll try to do news quickly. Tony, you want to take it away?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Do it. All right, Luke, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, of course. Happy to.
All right, Tony.
The Monerotopia Weekly News segment is sponsored by WizardSwap.io, a non-custodial cryptocurrency exchange.
All right, we're already putting that sponsorship to good use. Got WizardSwap up there, who will now be our new sponsor for the next couple of weeks. Tony, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Good. It took me a little bit to load that because I saw news and then Wizard, and I was like, Wizard? Is that the one?
Yeah.
You updated it, so that's awesome.
Yeah, let's take it away. Let's try to run through the news pretty quick so we can get to viewers on stage if Luke has the time to stick around, and then some people can throw some.
Sure, of course. And since we have Luke, hey, Luke, and hey, everybody. So if you want to chime in to anything that we're going to discuss, yeah, please go ahead. And first of all, guys, like and share. It does help a lot. We have 61 people watching on YouTube, 31 likes. So go ahead and like if you haven't yet. For the first thing, we're going to discuss Archetype Market, which is the largest darknet market currently announcing a valid PGP public key is now required and 2FA by default. So for the old users of the dark market, that's not necessary. But if you're a new user, it is required that you use PGP and a two-factor authentication. And for the old users, if you don't have a PGP nor 2FA enabled, then it's recommended that you do and go ahead and do it. And they have 420,000 users.
Yeah, that's what I found most impressive about that post. So I wanted to highlight there. Wow, that's a lot of real world Monero users using it for whether you not agree with what they're doing with it. Those are people that are actually using Monero. So go ahead, Tony.
Then I thought this post was really interesting. So Satoshi Van Saberhagen. So he said that 99% of his portfolio is Bitcoin and that he's going to stack Monero from now on. He's going to be focused on Monero. So that was on April 21st. So he said he's going to hold Bitcoin, you know, but from now on, he's just going to focus on Monero. Now he's saying on April 28th, so it took like a week, he sold all his Bitcoin for Monero, the only cryptocurrency whose community is willing to fight the regulator. I'll gladly go down with this ship or face criminalization alongside my fellow pirates. So within 1 week, this person went from 99% of my portfolio is Bitcoin, but I'm interested in Monero from now on and I'm going to stack Monero. And 1 week later, he sold all his Bitcoin for Monero, which is actually what I did when I first learned about Monero a couple years ago.
It's like falling down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. You get that same, it's that same gravity that pulls you in with Monero. It's that same feeling of like, oh my God, this is that realization when you realize why you need Monero. It was similar to the realization of when I first got into Bitcoin, right?
Same. I was so pulled into
have that aha moment. Yeah,
exactly. I think anybody that is looks bait is still fine. I don't know. Regardless if it's bait or not, you know, still should inspire people to look into Monero or probably do the same if they will.
There's a lot of people on the that are, you know, opening their eyes to Monero right now. We're seeing it on Twitter. You know, this is the most extreme instance, somebody who's saying that they sold all their Bitcoin for Monero. But I'm just seeing in general a lot of people on Twitter showing interest in Monero and considering moving over to it. It's very exciting to see. I mean, you know, we're still seeing laser-eyed Bitcoiners throw some of the same criticisms they've always thrown in the past. Basically, what is the criticism at this point? I mean, it's kind of weird in Bitcoin. It's like you have those that are saying, you know, they just don't care about the privacy aspects, really. They're like, well, Bitcoin is replacing fiat. And they don't really care that it's completely traceable. There's that argument. And so you're never going to get those people to find interest in Monero. But there's a big swath of big Bitcoin people that are like, wait a minute. I thought we were building something that was also supposed to be digital cash. And so those people are now finding their way to Monero because there's a really running out of other options. Samurai Wallet shut down. Wasabi Wallet shut down. These were the largest tools that people, tools, platforms that were being used in Bitcoin for obtaining privacy. They don't exist any longer. So you have these people that were interested in using Bitcoin in a digital cash-like way that no longer are essentially able to do it. You can still do it in other ways, but it's not nearly as user-friendly. And so they're realizing if I want to have that user experience, if I want a tool that performs the function of digital cash, I have to use Monero. And honestly, it's no better time to get into Monero in terms of price versus Bitcoin. So these people should consider themselves very lucky that are having this realization only now when it's slapping them in the face. And they should have had the realization years ago. You should just don't realize how lucky you are that you're realizing this at a time when Monero is like historically low against Bitcoin. It's like I almost feel like not promoting Monero this way. Like you don't deserve to discover it here. So if you're on the fence, consider yourself very lucky that you've you know, been slapped in the face at this moment in time, because it also happens to be an opportune time. Price-wise, to get into Monero versus Bitcoin.
Really good points. And it's actually a good segue for us to go into Wasabi Wallet and then what Seth posted. But what Doug said is a really, really good point. This is the best time to get into Monero just because Bitcoin is really high and Monero is low. So if you were to sell your Bitcoin, you would get a lot of Monero in exchange. So this is the best time to do it. And when you orient yourself to human liberty, people tend to, when they look into Monero, just like it happened to me, Doug, and you know, a lot of other people, or that person, you look into Monero and then you quickly realize, why do I have Bitcoin? I want to sell all of it and just get into Monero fully. So I'm really happy that it happened for that person, and hopefully more people are going to follow through. But yeah, like Doug said, in Wasabi Wallet, so they're now going to have, they're shutting down its CoinJoin coordinating service effective June 1st. So that's a really, really big thing. Even without CoinJoin's, Wasabi's client-side filtering architecture, Tor integration, and custom coin selection make it the most private light wallet available. But, however, the nature of the Bitcoin blockchain prevents users from obtaining complete privacy without CoinJoin's. So this is going to affect Trezor's BTC-based server. So it's going to affect, you know, quite a few wallets. Now,
read the last line of their blog posts about shutting down.
The day will come when someone will write the code to perfect all the properties of good money.
Until then, and let us be grateful for what we have accomplished together. Be mindful.
We had Nopara. I had Nopara on this show famously or infamously a few months ago. He's very well of the fact that that code does exist. Somebody has invented it. Luke Parker is currently working on upgrading it and making it more unstoppable and untraceable than ever. There was his, I don't know if that was just supposed to be kind of like a dig at Monero there. I don't know what's going on there. That's kind of funny though.
Yeah. All over the code shift back. That was funny. But that's unfortunate. But then
protocol level default privacy exists.
It does. And it's only going to get better. Now Seth posted, he said, he doesn't give a flying fuck about mass adoption or Monero's exchange rate with Bitcoin. He just cares about real humans being able to spend their money as they see fit without surveillance or permission. And that's very important within our community as well, not to get attached to the name Monero and everything, and just to always follow the tool that will be able to do this, which is allow you to use money as you want without surveillance or permission. This is the most important thing. He said Bitcoin was good enough in many situations, thanks to Samurai Wallet and maybe Wasabi Wallet or Seth. But now, there are no tools available outside of a beta GUI or joint market with no battle testing. Bitcoin is not good enough anymore. It's sad, and I hope people will realize what's happening right now within the Bitcoin privacy space, and that they will discover Monero. And actually, I'm going to skip a couple articles that we have, and I'll go directly into Edward Snowden. It's a short clip, but he says, I've been warning Bitcoin developers for 10 years that privacy needs to be provided for at a protocol level. This is the final warning. The clock is ticking. So let's go ahead and watch this.
Enough. You have to have this stuff in the protocol. It has to happen on chain. And that's where you see things like, yeah, Monero is great. I use Monero. Right?
Cool. But it's interesting, like when we tried to get him on the show, when we offered to pay him in Monero, he asked for quite a large sum as well. And this is not to talk badly of Edward Snowden. It's just that when he got invited onto the show and we were going to effectively pay him on Monero, he refused. They just scratched everything off. And then the moment they heard Monero, they just went in a different direction. So,
the excuse was that he had gotten busy and, you know, well,
yeah,
maybe it's true, but it was a weird coincidence that he showed interest. I was asking for $25,000, and when we said, "All right, well, we'll pay you, but it'll be in Monero," that's when the kind of the deal went south. But yeah, we'd love to get him as a remote speaker at Monerotopia. So we are reaching out; would be amazing. Now more than ever would be the time for Snowden to come out and talk about why Monero matters,
especially since he used to work for the government, but now he works for the public. So he needs to support us. We need this help in any way he can. So that'll be really awesome. That'll be really, really cool. Okay, so we discussed this stuff. Now let's go into this article by Chila. So this is very interesting. So basically, the UK having the power to seize your crypto asset without requiring to make an arrest, they can just seize your passwords or memory stick or anything that could give them the information to help with the investigation. They can just basically transfer your unquote illicit crypto assets, and then they can do whatever they want with it. They can, you know, unquote destroy it. They can return it to circulation if it's not is not conductive to the public good. So if it's not conductive to the public good, they can destroy it. Allegedly, privacy coins, for example, are a form of cryptocurrency that grant an extremely high degree of anonymity and are often used for money laundering. Now are they going to use this for the good to actually try to track criminals and illicit payments? I don't think they're going to use the power just for that. I think this is just more so of an excuse.
And
but what's most interesting here is that, you know, that the UK government is saying whenever they confiscate Monero, they destroy it.
Yeah. So how do you destroy it?
It's pretty crazy thought too, right? I mean, this could have an effect on how much Monero exists, right? If the policy of governments becomes that when they obtain Monero, it effectively gets destroyed, right? They send it to they lose the private keys, but you know, we're then trusting governments that they've actually got into a boating accident and lost their Monero. So it's just interesting, the dynamics that could ultimately end up playing on Monero.
Which
they're not destroying their Bitcoin, that's for sure. I mean, we've seen in years past some of the largest confiscations of any asset that ever occurred has been of Bitcoin, billions of dollars worth. And what does the government do? They then turn around and auction it off. Whereas with Monero, at least the UK government is coming out and saying, we don't auction it off. We don't put it back in the market. We quote unquote destroy it. We take it off the market. So reducing Monero's supply. So it's interesting to see. And I've heard or seen statements about that with regards to the US as well.
Right. But here's where the Telemission mission comes into play, because Monero is still going to have the Telemission mission, and we're still going to emit Monero. So it is going to affect Monero if that happens. It sees quite a good amount of it, but the fact that we don't cap the supply helps with people losing their situation.
Right. There would never be a problem of not having enough Monero because we were always creating. But I'm saying this is just an argument towards the scarcity of Monero, right? These are one of the criticisms that are against Monero. It doesn't have the 21 million cap. It has a tail emission. Obviously, we know why it has a tail emission. There's benefits, critical benefits that come with that tail emission. And we're really not losing scarcity on the other end. It just takes some abstract thinking to realize Monero is very, very scarce. It's extremely hard money. It's not infinite in supply unless there's an infinite amount of time. It's limited at any point in time. And actually, it may be more limited than you think because Monero gets lost. And if it becomes a currency that's actually a cryptocurrency that's actually used, there'll be more transactions made on chain and more opportunities for coins to get lost. And then there's other things like this that are playing into it. Governments confiscating Monero and then saying that they would not put it back on the market. So it just becomes kind of positive arguments as to why Monero is arguably very scarce.
Absolutely. Gumbat said, seems they haven't heard of the concept of divisibility. Lol, we're not running out of Monero anytime soon. Yeah. Okay, let's get into this one now. So this is interesting. Roger were charged with mail fraud, tax evasion, and filing false tax returns, wanted for extradition to the United States. And then Dan Hell wrote, good, he's been a net negative for Bitcoin. And then Eric wrote down below, this big will take Dan, WTF. And let's go ahead and open this link from the justice.gov. So essentially, he evaded nearly $50 million in taxes.
Accused of evading.
Accused.
This is just crazy. So we were just talking last show on... I was just talking about Roger Ver and how we were in talks to try to get him to come to Monerotopia. He works closely with Zano. He was involved indirectly in Monerotopia last year in some ways. And we were close to potentially have him come to Monerotopia. He actually, out of spaces where I was speaking to him, he said he would come. That's when it was in Argentina. Then we moved it to Mexico. So there was no confirmation. And then this happened. So doubt we'll be seeing Roger at Monerotopia, which is very unfortunate. But the level of disrespect that some of these quote unquote Bitcoiners had for this guy is just disgusting. I understand there were differences. There was the fork. Roger, I don't know, worked on, invested perhaps in some companies that, I don't know, disagreed with some of his investments, whatever it may be. but he did more for Bitcoin early growth, early adoption than arguably anybody else. I mean, he was the Bitcoin Jesus. He was the first kind of regular non-super techie guy that was in it for libertarian principles, that realized, holy shit, this thing that these nerds invented can replace fiat money. And he was one of the first to kind of realize this and then convey that message to the normies, not even normies, the other early adopters, and start conveying that message to those that were always looking for something to replace fiat. And he did a tremendous job at that. And then also gave back so much to the ecosystem. He was an entrepreneur, constantly investing in new companies. You know, I think he was an investor in Coinbase, you know, Roger Ver had his hands in so many things, in positive ways in the funding that he provided. And at some point, I think it was in 2014, he renounced his U.S. citizenship and left the country. Mm-hmm. And he paid an exit tax on the way out, because the way it works in the United States, you basically have to pay for your freedom. And so if you renounce your U.S. citizenship, you have to then make a payment to the country, I guess, based on the value of what your assets are at that time. He did all that and left. And then 10 years later, he's now being accused of essentially, I guess, not making the proper payment, I think is what it's really boiling down to. So just incredible. But I think that the biggest takeaway here is realizing how poisoned a big part of the Bitcoin community is, in that they just completely lack any respect for this guy. Whether or not he's ultimately guilty of these things, you know, that will be decided in a court of law. But what we know about Roger Ver is he is an extremely principled person who is in crypto for the right reasons before anyone else, and was out there spreading these ideas and bringing people into crypto for the purpose of creating peer-to-peer digital cash. And to not have respect for that person, I don't know, I think just shows a lack of I don't know, it's hubris, and it just shows a lack of intelligence for some of these quote-unquote Bitcoiners.
It is despicable behavior. And then wanted to add on to what Doug said. So it says that in total, Ver is alleged to have caused a loss to the IRS. So a loss to the IRS of at least $48 million. And it's interesting how these things work, because you worked so
prison.
Yeah.
A loss to the IRS.
It's a loss to the IRS. So Roger did his own research, put his own effort and sweat into making the right decisions to make money. And now he's alleged to have caused a loss to the IRS of at least $48 million. Yeah, it's very unfortunate. Besides,
He's a fascinating guy. I interviewed him. I recommend checking out that interview from a couple of years ago. That's when I kind of really first learned that he was more into Monero than I even knew. You know, he's a big Monero advocate, by the way. Obviously, because it is currently the most used form of peer-to-peer digital cash for people that are actually using it for those purposes of making, you know, untraceable cash transactions. And Roger is absolutely not in denial of that. He completely supports it, and he's a Monero fan. Gombat saying he realized Bitcoin could end war and dedicated his life to it. Yeah, he was very passionate about what the implications of digital peer-to-peer cash can be. He's a really interesting guy. I recommend checking out some of that interview or other interviews that where he kind of tells his story of how he got into Bitcoin and his story of who he was before he got into Bitcoin. Pretty interesting. I mean, he was in jail. He was in federal prison for, I think, 11 months for selling fireworks. He was running a business that was selling fireworks. And if you listen to the story, I mean, he really was not breaking any law in any egregious way. Other people were doing it, getting away. But he became basically, they wanted to make an example of him because he was very public in his disdain for the state out there. You know, which is what a lot of people are out here doing these days. I think a lot of people on this channel do. And so he was a target because of his political opinions and his disdain for the state. And so I recommend people taking a closer look at Roger Ver.
Plus, the last thing, he did so much to onboard people into Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash and to try businesses to accept. And he did a lot of work. So, yeah, it's very unfortunate what happened. On to our next thing. So this is an interesting take of a ransomware payment made on March 1st by United Health. So it's a $22 million ransomware payment. It was paid in Bitcoin on March 3rd. The funds began to move. Later that day, Monero began getting transaction spent. Perhaps that Bitcoin was swapped into XMR and chain analysis pursued. To be clear, this is all speculation, but it's plausible that law enforcement watched stolen Bitcoin move to a website where it was then traded into Monero. And because one method of attacking Monero is through spam, decided to flood Monero with fake transactions. Spamming transactions, allowing investigators to lower the size of the ring signatures and harm anonymity by owning a great majority of spends. You fill ring signatures with your dummy spends. It's one of the primary reasons Monero will upgrade to full chain membership proof soon. So this is an interesting take on what happened recently with the Monero spam attack. And let's see. Yeah, and then FBI has a $6 million bounty on Black Hat currently, which is the actor behind the attack.
Could be. I mean, that could be what the spam attack was all about. It's a good theory.
He did some research into this, actually. It's interesting, but it could be a plausible theory. Then we've heard about this a lot of times. The majority of the EU Parliament will later today approve far-reaching new anti-money laundering laws. We discussed this quite a bit in the past, but essentially, anonymous cash payments over 3,000 euro will be banned in commercial transactions. Cash payments over 10,000 euro will even be completely banned in business transactions. And this is a war on cash. The thing is that is very interesting. So the commission asked the public for their opinion on limiting cash payments in 2017. More than 90% of responding citizens spoke out against such a step. So nobody wanted cash to be restricted because they considered cash an essential personal freedom, and that restrictions on payments in cash are ineffective in achieving the potential objectives, which are fight against criminal activities, terrorism, and tax evasion. According to an ECB survey, up to 10% of citizens use cash even for amounts greater than 10,000 euro buying cars. So this is effectively a war on cash and trying to get the eurozone into the CBDC slowly by limiting cash and then eventually getting rid of cash. But it's just interesting how they've even conducted a survey in which they asked people, do you want this to happen? Do you still want cash? And people are like, yeah, we want cash. We need cash. Without anonymity. And then a few years later, okay, well, we're going to restrict it and eventually abolish it even. So
war on cash and the war on digital cash, 100%.
For sure. Now, this one is really interesting as well. So a vast new data set could supercharge the AI hunt for crypto money laundering. So Elliptic partnered with MIT and IBM, and they released a new AI model. This one is much larger than the one they had previously. The previous one had 200,000 transactions in the data set. This one is trained on 200 million transactions. As far as I'm aware, this is actually public. The data set is public, and it aims to spot the shape of Bitcoin money laundering. And how effective is it? How good is this model? So it's actually pretty good, according to them. Before, they were able to identify 0.1% of the transactions as being illicit and actually identify them. Now it's more one out of four, which is a large jump. It's not 100% accurate. They can identify, I think they said, 12 or 14 out of 52 of the customer accounts. They can identify whether they're suspicious or not. But again, it may not sound high, but compared to where they were before, where allegedly only 0.1% of the exchange's accounts were flagged as potential money laundering, it's quite a big jump, and they've made quite a big progress, which, again, it just shows how important Monero is and how important it is to have privacy on the fundamental level.
They're ramping up, increasing their ability on the technological level on how to track and trace Bitcoin, to use the transparent chain and to use AI to better gather the data. And you know, Bitcoin is obviously being attacked on all these other fronts too, where there's effectively no way to use Bitcoin privacy tools in Bitcoin to thwart those that are trying to track and trace you. And then they're limiting the ways for you to even obtain Bitcoin without, you know, essentially KYC. So it's being attacked on all fronts. And the end result is a traceable crypto, a central bank digital cryptocurrency that may not effectively, may not directly be controlled by the government, but run in such a way where it's defanged and it works in concert with governments, with the state, in a way where they're no longer threatened by it.
They've made such incredible progress over the past couple of years when it comes to these things. And essentially, the only... Now, it should be pretty clear that the only tool for liberty is Monero, because everything else is just KYC, and it's just dangerous to use in general. So, I think eventually we're going to have an exponential growth in Monero based on what's happening, hopefully, if people actually care about liberty and things of that nature.
I was going to say this, we have 8-bit. Hey, guys, it's my first time watching the show. I appreciate everything all of you guys are doing for privacy and Monero. I have taken too long to adopt it myself and have been doing the work to make the switch. Yeah, man, there's a lot of you, and thanks for jumping on, and try to join us on Viewers on Stage if you can. Give us your story. You don't have to turn your camera on. We'd love to hear how you arrived at Monero.
And it's never too late, to get into Monero 8-bit. So whether you get in today, tomorrow, it doesn't matter. As long as you make that switch, and, you know, that's the most important part. Now, so Wyoming Senator slams DOJ stake on non-custodial crypto software, vows to protect user rights. And there's not much information in this, but this is basically what she's going to do. So Cynthia Loomis said, "I'm deeply troubled by the Department of Justice hyper-aggressive argument that non-custodial software can constitute a money transmission service. This stance contradicts existing treasury guidance, common sense, and violates the rule of law. Arguments against self-custody software threaten the fundamental property rights that are core to being an American," she said. And she also wrote that she will do everything she can to fight for your rights to hold your own keys and run your own node. So hopefully she's going to make progress when it
comes. Yeah, it's nice to see. I mean, like we said, we need to fight this on all ends. So here's some, you know, she's always appeared to be somebody who's actually in it for the principles. So cool to see. Obviously, she's not out there talking about Monero, but nice to see that she's out there supporting essentially the Bitcoin privacy tools. I don't know if she's worded as in support of Bitcoin privacy tools, but, you know, wrapped up in the fact that Samurai was indicted is this idea that now they're changing the definition of what a money transmitter is. Regulators are now putting within that definition, wallets are non-custodial. And so it's a tremendous change in how regulators have been treating, the wallets up to this point. So good to see that she's out there, but it's really going to be decided in a court of law. We'll see what happens, you know, in the Samurai indictment. We'll see what happens with Tornado. This is where the law is being created. It's being created in the courts, and we're going to have to see what the end result is in terms of what new precedent is set in terms of what is considered a money transmitter.
Yeah. We have in the YouTube section Willard saying, "Me too, I'm ashamed, but better late than never. The Monero community welcomes the last law. Thank you all." Yeah, it's never too late, and you shouldn't be ashamed for getting into Monero just now, or it doesn't matter. As long as you realize it and you inform other people, that's the most important thing. Wunderhausen also said it's never too late to join Monero. It's never too late to join Monero. So now let's play this video, and then we'll go back onto this one, and then that'll be it for the new section. So Untraceable wrote, "Bitcoin is institutional grade, Monero is freedom grade, money for the people." We're going to play the whole 2 minutes.
none of them will ever be wrapped by a spot ETF. None of them will be accepted by Wall Street. None of them will be accepted by mainstream institutional investors as crypto assets.
So in the DeFi report that you mentioned, we highlighted lots of different types of technical features and compliance controls that can be built in at different layers of the ecosystem.
This is the one universal consensus accepted institutional grade crypto asset in the world.
But the more Bitcoin that's held in funds, the less that is available for users. Its use case as a digital currency is further away than ever.
There'll be know your customer this, there'll be anti-money laundering that.
A good place to start might be something like sanctions. OFAC has already stated in their compliance guidance that miners may already have sanction screening obligations.
What that basically does is it transitions Bitcoin from a decentralized permissioning system into a centralized permission system, where you basically have an IOU from the blacklist to the others.
There'll be some tax regulations, there'll be some back and forth over what you can do, there'll be concerns about privacy.
Put another way, Wall Street did what Wall Street does best. It took a risky asset and made a market. It subsumed Bitcoin into the system.
Fungibility in Bitcoin is actually worse than PFAT.
People just trust Bitcoin. It's 200 times larger than Monero. So how do you think?
It's not larger than Monero. It's not. It's nothing. You're talking about the fucking market? No, Monero is the only goddamn currency that's used.
And in the worst case, you know, if everybody has to go to a central service to check if their Bitcoins are valid, or if they aren't, they have to sell them at a discount and all that kind of thing. This can eventually lead to a collapse and a loss of confidence.
This is a really epic video.
So good. It's so good. I'm sure it's he's a creative genius, that man. And has such a good grasp of Monero tech and Bitcoin tech.
And this tells a lot about him. He said, somebody asked, am I allowed to download this clip and share it under your post? He said, yes, please do. Download it and share it wherever. No need to credit me. I'll have a link to a higher quality version in a few minutes as well.
Single video
that Adam Back, those Adam Back clips are amazing. That's from an old video of, find it on YouTube, obviously, where it's from like 2014 or something, maybe even early, like 2013, and he's talking about the fungibility issues with Bitcoin at that time, and that the need for Bitcoin to maintain its ability to be fungible, and obviously nothing has been done since. So he, back then, Adam Back seemed to have cared about the need for Bitcoin to be private and fungible. And, you know, none of the things were implemented, you know, even confidential transactions, which he helped create, was never implemented into Bitcoin. And so there's just been no improvement since to improve Bitcoin's fungibility. It's only gotten worse. Well, I mean, there were attempts with building Bitcoin privacy tools, but now we're seeing those things prove to not be practical, given the fact that governments can shut them down. It needs to be private and fungible on the protocol level.
And it's interesting whenever you hear Michael Saylor talk about Bitcoin, like he just, what's the point? He makes it like if you know about if you have certain qualities within yourself, you start to realize that what's the point in Bitcoin just by listening to Michael Saylor, because he makes it as a case against freedom to use Bitcoin, essentially.
Yeah, he's completely pro-regulation. He's like, whatever Bitcoin needs to be for basically governments and large companies to be able to put it on their in their treasury, right? And so that's all he cares about. He doesn't care if it's completely KYC'd, AML'd, and held in custody all at Coinbase at that point. He wants it to be completely accepted by regulators so that it can then be fiatized and it can go up in fiat value.
And beyond his metaphors and expressions with these cyber hornets, which are nodes and you know, all these metaphors. Yeah, I know. He just wants to pump
the analogies.
I know. The energetic field of the cyber hornets feeding onto consciousness.
Digital energy.
Digital energy encrypted into ether.
Okay. Oh, this was good. Yeah, this is a good clip. This is, you know, this kind of, yeah, play this one. This was just last night. They had a debate, a roundtable debate on Bitcoin versus gold. They spoke about a bunch of other stuff too. I recommend checking out. It was fun. And yeah, obviously Eric Voorhees was on the smartest guy in the room there, obviously. And I'm sure everybody here knows Eric Voorhees, old school Bitcoiner. Once again, another guy like a Roger Ver in for the right reasons. But, you know, obviously extremely intelligent and a creator in the space, has built some great companies. And so it's a good debate to listen to, but like all debates with these gold bug guys, it's always been coming down to the same thing for guys like Peter Schiff. And it's that, you know, Bitcoin has no utility. That's the end argument that they're making, is, you know, Peter Schiff's argument is it's only being used as a speculative asset, and it doesn't have any actual utility at the end of the day. And what the argument ends up boiling down to is like, well, no, it's censorship resistant digital cash. That's the utility. And then there's always that realization, but is it? Because it doesn't seem to be working like that, because it's completely traceable. So it's like, it's interesting that these gold bugs get that better than some of the Bitcoiners. But go ahead and play the clip.
Before I do that, if you go in the comment section, which is bit funny. So all I saw were two old guys yelling at two young guys about how uncomfortable they are with change, two dinosaurs who just don't want to see or accept change, simple. Which, again, like Doug said, the gold bug, I mean, they tend to understand these things better than the Bitcoiners, and how, you know, it's really not censorship resistance.
Don't get me wrong. Eric Voorhees does under this, by the way, but go ahead and play that.
Should I play? I think he says from minute three or...
No, it was like the 3 hour mark. It was like the 3 hour, 00 and 30 seconds, I think.
Oh, because this is just 2 hours. So do you want me to...
How is that?
Yeah, I saw 3 hours and then...
Oh, maybe they cut off part of it?
Oh, really?
Oh, because it had like an intro. Yeah, I don't know if you'll be able to find the time.
Oh, so maybe it's like the intro and it's been...
That's the link that I sent you?
Yeah. You remember like the topic where Bitcoin decentralized, Bitcoin gambling token and a scam, all Peter should be wrong.
It's towards the end.
Money laundering, cryptocurrency traceability, that'll be interesting.
Yeah. That might be it. Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
The bad guys can track you even better.
The great firewall
of China is that they know everything about you. They know what you do in private, in school, in the streets, on the train.
They're not John.
Your bedroom.
They're not.
They know their world this way about you.
Right. People want everything.
So that's the world of the papers, I'm sorry to say. Crypto doesn't make any difference.
Go ahead, Peter.
I'm addressing his point. Yeah, you can transfer Bitcoin. Right? It's easier to transfer it, but it all depends on the value of what you're transferring. Is there going to be a market for it in the future? Is there going to be a price for it? The main reason there's a price for Bitcoin now is because people want to speculate on a future price appreciation. But if people lose confidence in that, if they don't think Bitcoin is, you know, going to go to the moon, if they think it's topped out, the market's going to collapse. And so, yeah, you can transfer it, but what is it going to be worth when the guy gets it? And then what are they going to be able to sell it for?
Really good point. Really good point.
Yep. These are all scary questions that market participants have to deal with when they're actually using real assets. Things can be volatile, and like, I'm not scared of prices.
But you're
people that can't get paid in other ways.
This is why your arguments are specious.
But again, who's to say that I can't use a different crypto? Even though there's 20,000 other cryptos, whatever, that exist today, and some of them maybe are better than Bitcoin, some are not, but somebody could come up with a new and better Bitcoin tomorrow that everybody said, hey, this is what we use. Forget about that old one. This one is newer. Isn't it's better. Great? It's faster.
Isn't it great to have like actual innovation in markets and creativity and finance?
But then what happens to the value of all your Bitcoin when nobody wants it anymore? Because there's something better.
It could change.
There has been a revolution in payment system. All these fintech solution payment system did not exist in 2008 when Bitcoin was started. 15 years later, as I said, billions of people every day do billions of transactions using this fintech system. They have nothing to do with blockchain.
But not in Russia. So it's a fact. Not in Russia, not in China.
Not in China, they use Alipay with ChatPay, actually. Yeah, go see China, nobody's using cash.
How are you going to send your Chinese?
All over Africa, okay, where financial system, you don't have bank branches, everybody's using M-Pesa, okay? So there's been a revolution that has allowed even the poor farmer in Africa to do payment system instantaneously, do microcredit and other things. And it's changing the lives of people. Bitcoin in Africa has not made any difference to anybody.
Cool. I would love I would love to see you send in peso from your penthouse in New York to someone in Africa.
It's not possible. I can do Venmo. The most important thing, not me to send M-Pesa, but within sub-Saharan Africa, the payment system has become essentially based on M-Pesa. And that's a revolution for them.
Okay. Look, I'm not saying there shouldn't be other systems.
And if there is a dictator in Nigeria, if you transfer your Bitcoin to a wallet that's on exchange in Nigeria, you can go and seize it.
You're making arguments against third-party custodians. Huh? You're making arguments against third-party custodians. Of course, if you leave your Bitcoin with a third-party custodian, it's no different than leaving your money with a bank.
That's anyone who actually with the ETFs,
you know, everywhere around the world, the regulation of crypto, whatever you want to call them, is based on having wallets that are maintained by exchanges.
Can I ask these guys
and they have to know exactly what you have, so that if there is a tax liability, they can go to the exchange and say,
is there anything what that would change your mind, Nouriel?
What?
Is there any, like, because you're a very smart guy, we know.
This is really interesting.
Let it go a little more. I think this is where he says it. Yeah, it sucks.
Smart people change their mind. Is there anything, you guys have both spoken in absolutes, it's a gambling token.
What is happening in
we think space. It's not a gambling token.
No.
What would change your mind? Okay. What fact would have to happen?
Okay, so my view,
would change your mind?
My view of the financial system, payment, let's not talk about asset management or capital market activity or insurance or lending. Payment systems in the future are going to be based, first of all, on having central bank digital currencies. They're not going to dominate everything. There'll be limit to how much you can have it in things. They're not going to have problems of privacy because in every democracy, we already found technological solution to make sure that the same way in which today, if a law enforcement authority, tax authority wants to do an audit on you, they know everything about you because they can go to the bank and find out everything you have. Same thing's going to happen when there is a CBDC. The government doesn't know what's there, but if there's a tax audit, they can find out. Okay, so there's not going to be any risk of the government taking over, knowing everything I'm doing. That's bullshit. So you're going to have this system with CBDCs, first of all. Then you're going to have tokenized deposits because the banks don't want to be disintermediated. Tokenization of deposits probably is a good idea. People believe in stable coins. The problem with stable coins is they are literally going back to free banking. Whenever you have free banking, like the 19th century, you can have things that are bubbled, they collapse, and then having lots of different monies doesn't make sense. The only way to avoid it, regulation of stable coin is going to be, they have to be like a narrow bank. So if you have a stable coin, everything has to be 100% in short-term treasury that are safe. And then there will be other things that are part of the financial system, like the fintech and payment system. And then there'll be these crypto things. They're going to be whatever you want to call them. There'll be a small piece of this thing. They're not going to be currencies. They're going to have to do with payment system. For international transactions, there'll be stuff that occurs instantaneously. Once we have everybody's ID regulated, then you can transfer money knowing who is a criminal, who is not. And that's going to happen because technology can allow us to do this in 5 seconds like we do with Venmo. So that's going to be the payment system of the world in which crypto is just a little piece of something, but doesn't matter. That's what's going to be the revolution in financial services.
Nothing.
In payments, and we can talk about other things if you want to.
Well, Anthony, what would change your mind? You always ask me my mind and get me to.
Tony, move it a little further up.
You want me to go to?
Not too far, because it's like, I think it's Rubini's next point when he starts talking again.
And it's all the rich financial and real is deposits.
That's it.
The value of the network is to tokenize deposits. There's something, real financial assets. Tokenization of financial and real assets of various sorts. They can be all tokenized. And we'll have a world in which things can be done as a real liquidity. They can be
quantified.
Because there is
the question
tokenization of things that are going in financial assets. Or the lot of vaporware.
People that are going to
tokenize vaporware, that means
property.
Tokenized gold.
That they're willing to trade with each other. So I think on that note, I believe that there is. You guys believe that there isn't. He obviously believes that there is. And in 10 years, I believe there'll be 2 billion people up from 3
billion.
It's all right.
No deposit.
It would have been nice. Like, or you put it. Yeah, whatever. Too bad. I set the time, but I guess they changed the thing. Okay, it was a good clip. But I recommend listening to it in general. As you heard, there were good points. You were getting close. You're almost there. It was further to the end.
Only use
this one.
With respect, already technology
tell us with respect. With
so
respect.
They only use.
Well, I'll make this.
All right, forget it. Forget it, Tony. Yeah. All right. What else? We got any other news?
No, that was it.
That was it. Well, all right.
This. You want to go into? We have the dev segment.
I think we do. Did we lose Tux?
We do. He said he's coming back.
Oh wow, we have dev segment again today. Oh my god, I think we lost Luke. I think we lost Luke. How long is the dev segment?
Let me just see. Tuck was dealing with it. The dev segment is 11 minutes.
Oh wow. Okay. Maybe we close that out on the end. So let's bring up viewers on stage right now.
Sure. Okay. Let's do viewers seg.
The viewers on stage segment. It's that time where we invite you, the viewers, up on stage to comment on anything you've heard so far today, ask the guest a question, or maybe talk about one of the news topics. Come on down.
Okay, I see Alaska. Anon.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I believe that the dev segment, the file type wasn't usable. It had stills and audio only. So they were going to try to get a different file type for it.
Oh, okay.
Tux would know better.
Hey, guys. Sorry about that. I can play it right now.
Okay. Yeah, but we could play it at the end. Well, how long is this? 10 minutes?
Check. It's only 10 minutes. Yep. Exactly.
Let's play it on the end. Let's get people talking up here.
Anybody okay. I'm going to have to leave, like, right now. And I don't know how to upload it without... Because the clip's too large to upload it as a... As a brand clip, I have to like do it, present it from my account.
It's kind of why not just do the dev segment as a separate section later on, like a separate upload.
Yeah, we could do that.
That's possible too.
We'll do that,
or just next week.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, so yeah, anybody that wants to jump up, come on up. I think we lost Luke, which is
yeah.
Okay.
We
still have Wizard Swap.
Yep, we've got to bring everyone up. All right, guys.
I got you. Really hoping I could bring something with Wizard Swap, if you don't mind. So here's my question. First off, maybe you're familiar with, there was a guy that I think I first heard about him on Monero Talk, but his name is Keith Wiener, and he had a full research paper about what makes money, what gives money its moneyness. And a lot of the concepts are really old, but there was a few that were really new. And one of the most important concepts with what makes something money and why the dollar has such staying power is the idea of something being liquid enough to generate returns, meaning that the need for capitalizing productive enterprises or the need for providing liquidity, you get like a rate, you know, just like if you have a CD, you should expect a certain amount of returns for staking your money for loaning people. And one of the things that I've for a very long time been upset by is the future of getting returns on staking crypto has always been within the crypto itself, like some kind of proof of stake reward or whatever, or it's been ETFs and exchanges. And I was really pleased to find out that you're actually sourcing it from the community the way that you are. But do you want to kind of go into further detail about the concept of staking for the purposes of providing liquidity and how that actually works to effectively reinforce the moneyness of crypto?
So let's see here. As far as the moneyness goes, for Monero, especially with the like kind of finance stuff, price discovery has been a little challenging. So having some kind of way to ensure that the liquidity providers do get a return, which also kind of I feel helps ensure a certain price status as well, right? So we kind of make sure that we're going forward and in the right direction, and then we're forcing those prices up a little bit. So you pay a little bit of higher fee, but that makes it also that that no one's going to dump that Monero for less than that, right? So we're definitely trying to make sure that the value is maintained, and that's definitely an interest. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
But yeah, but what part you play in that? That's exactly what I'm curious about. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you know, I'm I'm hands off as far as the actual liquidity, and I'm basically just trying to build a platform and listen to the community to incentivize the liquidity providers to bring enough liquidity to keep the ball rolling, basically. So I'm here talking to them and kind of in a constant communication with everybody to make the community work and to make sure that we aren't going backwards.
So how much? Yeah, go ahead. So how much yield can you earn right now if you provide the liquidity in Monero?
So obviously, it depends on daily transaction activity. And then, basically we have a pool and we lump everything together. And then we, based on the percentage of how much liquidity that you have in the pool, you get that cut of every transaction. So if you provide 69% of the pool or 15%, you're going to get basically like 15% of your money is going to be then used as liquidity, and you're going to get a guaranteed return of a couple percent on that liquidity. And right now for Monero, returns are, you'll get between 2 to 5% swaps, and, depending on market and how markets go, if you were to say, I guess, turn it into a stable coin or flip it back and forth, you'd be able to make a few percent, consistently perhaps. But, and we do, if you log in any trading account and you want to play with it a little bit, we have kind of an APY calculator, not super exact, but it'll give you a ballpark idea of, daily basically returns in real time on the liquidity provided. So you can put a few bucks in and turn on swapping and kind of see how the APY turns out. And I saw someone kind of mention APY, and maybe we'll think about putting some kind of like user average of generated returns on the homepage eventually. So that might help everybody get a good idea of what's going on.
It sounds a bit like Ethereum liquidity pools. Is it modeled similarly to that?
Yeah, that was certainly part of the inspiration.
So if you wanted to be a liquidity provider, do y'all prefer, for example, you could just put Monero, or you could put like Monero and Bitcoin, I assume you could just add liquidity to any coin that's traded there?
Correct. So if you want to just put in Monero and then, you put in your Monero and then you say, I want to trade it for Bitcoin or Bito or, Ethereum, you can go ahead and enable trading for those, and your coins will, on demand will be exchanged out for those. And if you want to be able to have the customer swap back, you can enable for Bitcoin and Ethereum to enable swapping with Monero. And now you got bidirectional, and you'll be making a little bit of proceeds off both ends as trades come in.
Yeah, one thing. So at least my understanding of liquidity providers is they make the most money. They do best in stable markets that are largely trending sideways. When you get volatility to one side or the other, that's where you can end up in situations where you might not win. You might have just been better off holding the one asset or the other asset. But so hypothetically, Monero's been, we had kind of the big dip with the delisting, but Monero's actually been very stable for the past 2 years now, at least for its US dollar price.
Yeah, and we're actively researching implementing some stable coins right now to make, being able to swap, say, between DAI and Monero back and forth to help kind of secure your positions. We're definitely researching that and hope to bring that forward soon.
So I have a question. I missed the first, say, call it 30 minutes of the episode, so I'm going to have to go back and watch it. But my quick question for you is this a custodial thing or non-custodial?
So if you're providing liquidity, then it would be custodial.
All right, that's what I needed to know. Thank you.
So I just wanted to throw out a little bit of history for anybody who isn't keeping up with. So one of the ways that gold lost its monetary status, and people who are into these kinds of things, like really, really into the history, most of us would agree that this is the nail in the coffin for gold having lost its money status in recent years. So things like, for example, if a large swath of the country was building, say, a railroad, they would float a bond, and that railroad would borrow money in terms of ounces of gold, and they were expected to pay back interest in gold. So in other words, the idea of borrowing in gold, denominated in gold, and the interest is paid in gold was part of the lubrication of the entire economy. And sometimes that gold wouldn't even leave the vault it was just the credit by which the construction of the railroad was established, and then people would be paid in maybe silver certificates or something like that. But the ability to finance first hinges on the idea that there is an infrastructure for producing interest on capital that is being saved. So in other words, like one of the key elements to money, the first you have to have a circular economy, and Monero has set up a very powerful circular economy considering its market cap and its adoption rate and all that. It's very strong. The next step would logically be to have some kind of way to generate a return on saving Monero, which is something that WizardSwap would be offering in this situation. Now, I haven't used it yet. I heard about it yesterday. But the thing is if this system turns out to be what he's claiming it is, which I believe it is from just checking out their situation, that would represent the next domino in the series of Monero becoming functionally equal to cash dollars. And there's a lot of things that Monero does far better than the dollar that would give it an edge at each step in the process. So by having an interest-bearing savings vehicle, you're crossing off one of the most important elements of Monero being money. And that is a requirement for establishing the price of using Monero for finance. So in other words, the interest that you can generate by just holding Monero is the floor for the interest that you would charge on borrowing it for productive labor. And then that establishes what kind of profit a business should generate in order to be a viable business endeavor. Now, if you reverse this, what happens in our economy now, even though all of that process is how the dollar became what it is, what happens in our economy now is the people closest to the printers have a very low entry point into dollarization, and the people farthest away from the printing of money have extremely high interest that needs to be paid. So in other words, there's a regulatory capture where the closer you are to the source of newly created money, the less productive you have to be financially viable. And it's also that way with other forms of debt. So this, if it works, I have to try it. Sounds like it's going to be fun to try. But if what WizardSwap is saying he's created here is a functioning system, that is an extremely important development in replacing dollars for the purposes of finance capital. And it no longer has to be this horrible degenerate garbage that you play on Ethereum, but you can actually use it the way that you would use traditional finance. What do you think about that, Wizard?
You're muted.
Well, one of the main things for digital peer-to-peer cash is to try to remove middlemen and reduce friction. So, that's certainly what we're in the business of trying to do.
Gunbat, what were you about to say?
I'd love to have Monero lending someday. I'm not like the DeFi lending that we have right now that's basically just providing, it's just lending for leverage, just for trading. I would love to have like actual lending to business and that kind of stuff.
So there's one thing about when we, and like I was saying, having interest for swaps is a huge step. So that has to be kind of ironed out before the next step with the lending. But one of the things about if we can get to lending and capital system that Monero has over the dollar in an amazing way is the fact that it's on-chain and irreversible and digital will allow you to do all kinds of things that you just cannot do with the dollar. So for example, you could use like a, let's just say a DarkFi smart contract. You could lock up a certain amount of Monero to be paid out over certain periods of time with certain metrics. But then the other thing is when you get that money, that Monero in your wallet, it can't be clawed back from you. And basically what I'm saying is by removing all of the litigious bullshit that happens in our current finance system and all of the overhead from just layers upon layers of bureaucrats and doing all of these digital forms of everything. If we get to stage three, if we finish the interest-bearing market and then we get to full-blown finance capital, at that point, Monero, it's already unstoppable for what it does. But at that point, even just trying to compete with Monero would be an absolute suicide mission because you could never beat the fact that it's so low overhead to accomplish these kinds of things. But that's just my two cents. Like, the home stretch will be the easiest part.
Yeah, but I guess I'm just not picturing how Monero lending work, because how do you enforce it, right? Like, right now in Ethereum you have over collateralization, but that's not the kind of lending that works for business, right? So I'm not picturing, but I'd love to have it someday.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that lending is a very difficult thing to accomplish without some centralized custodian, because somebody has to arbitrate whether or not the conditions of some contract were fulfilled. And it's notoriously difficult to tie real world activity back into blockchain. The closest thing we have right now are oracles, and you know, those are kind of gameable. They're sort of like isolated proof of stake contracts layered in or woven into to other platforms. I feel like the lending aspect and the yield generation aspect in terms of lending, that's somewhat of a different thing from sort of getting a fee for being a liquidity provider for the exchange of two assets. Those are, while they're similar and they both provide a certain type of yield, they're really different types of yield. The lending yield is different from liquidity provider yield.
So I completely agree that the technical challenge is a little bit daunting from the perspective that we have right now. But I would point out that the already solved technical challenge of trying to use dollars for it was actually much harder, and it's already been done. And my counterpoint to what you're saying would basically be, so imagine a world where Monero liquidity providing has a pretty well-established interest rate that's fluctuating with the market and people's demands. That also means that people already have a demand for Monero. They're already using it in a circular economy to a certain extent. And not only that, but there is a value in holding Monero that is an interest-bearing amount. But that interest is going to go down as there's less money velocity. Right. So in other words, when money velocity goes down, the interest rate goes down. So that money is going to have an ever increasing interest in trying to pursue productive endeavors. So you now have this raging financial incentive to find a way to do it. But let me give you an example of something that is very difficult to do in banking now that would be actually pretty easy to do with crypto. So, for example, you could agree to lend a certain amount of Monero for the purposes of some kind of project, and then you could put it in a smart contract, and then certain individuals could submit to that smart contract that they are a valid wallet, right? And you could have, let's say, two people that agree that this person is in fact one of the wallets that is working on this project and is agreed to have paid this much in Monero, right? So you could first off verify that the capital is locked up if you were going to. So let me give you an example from my own life. Like, if I agree to a construction project, or if I agree to haul a bunch of freight for somebody or something like that, I oftentimes have to finish most of the job before I even start to get paid. And I have very little means by which I can even verify that the person has the money to spend. And I have no way of knowing whether or not the bank is going to backtrack halfway through on money that they've agreed to provide. Now, with Monero and smart contracts, you could set it up to verify that the money is locked. You could de-risk that capital by acknowledging that that capital is in fact there. You could know in advance who is the person who is validating payouts. And you could also directly link, like, the labor level to the capital provision. So in other words, a person agreeing to do the job could get paid directly from the capital source, like the capital fund source, as opposed to the person who is organizing the job. There's all kinds of things that already outcompete the dollar system in doing large-scale projects that are expected to yield high returns. And all of the downside challenges that they've been solved in the dollar, and they're harder to do than they are on crypto. That's my retort. I know that it's hard, but I'm saying it is easier than where we've already got it done in dollars.
I would contend that lending is it's a thing that you want to look way out to the future for. I think we have like far more urgent tasks at hand in having Monero be something that I can pay all my bills. I want to live on Monero. I don't even come close to. The closest I can come is a Walmart gift, a Sam's Club gift card. I can't live on Monero. And that's the place where, lending comes way later than that. I think, the priority should be, we got to build this circular economy. We have to be able to live on this stuff. I have to be able to pay rent. I have to pay my taxes. I have to go buy a tractor with it. I have to pay for things with this, and everybody has to accept it. These are the big challenges. I mean, I can see it's tempting to go off and talk about a technical solution that's easier to solve, but you don't need as urgently. But to me, the urgency is I have to live off my Monero, and today I can't do that.
Take a look at Shopit. Take a look at Shopinbit. Because I think they will offer basically to pay for whatever you want with your Monero. So you might be able to pay your taxes or your rent or whatever through Shopinbit.
I will. Yeah. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Yeah, John. There's also CakePay. You can buy prepaid Visa cards up to the.
That doesn't offer me a non KYC way to, go buy gas, for instance. The only way for me to buy fuel is in the United States, using my Monero is to, move the money, first buy a Visa gift card, then I have to move that into Google Pay, which is back to KYC. And,
right.
My Monero movement was private, but it's still, spending traces back to me. I'm trying to, I'm trying to be private in the whole flow, my fuel,
right.
Where I buy the fuel, everything.
Also, I didn't know. So Google Pay has KYC on the United States. I didn't know that.
Throw it out there, Prancing. Like, for one, I completely, totally, 100% agree with you that there is, pressing issues with establishing the circular economy now. And I promise you, like, that is where I put most of my effort. Right. However, the circular economy and interest bearing assets and then lending, they all kind of bleed together. And so you could almost think of it like the further the circular economy gets, the more people will, because the thing is you always want to know what to do with your money while you're not doing something with your money. You see it like, no matter what kind of money it is. So let me give you a quote from Warren Buffett. I think it was something like, with gold, or the problem with gold is it doesn't bear interest. And then he gave this example. If I buy an ounce of gold and I put it in a dresser drawer, and then 30 years later, I open up that dresser drawer, I still have the exact same ounce of gold. Or he might've said lump. Now he was trying to say that as like a derogatory thing. And everything he's saying is true, okay? But the other thing about it is that's one of the things that makes it attractive as a safe haven, okay? And a gold bug would even go so far as to say that's precisely why it's so incredible, because it stays exactly the same, okay? But in the world of economics, it's not like that, because if you stay in exactly the same place, entropy will continue to go on as usual. So if you have 1,000 ounces of gold,
that's a theotized world. We live in a world that's full of fiat.
Well, no. Hear me out. Hear me out. You're right about the fact that the fiat system makes it worse. But when you eat, a day later, you're going to have to eat again. When you buy a house, a couple of years later, you're going to have to repair, even if nobody lives in it, right? The roof will wear out over time. Like the house will settle over time. You'll have to adjust your doors and all kinds of other stuff. That's the process of entropy in the natural world. Now, the fact that they print money makes it exponentially worse. I get that. But to stay the same is not ideal. Now, earlier in the episode, Body had mentioned something that is extremely important that has been learned about the dollar, which is the dollar doesn't have to hold its value to be currency. It just has to hold its value enough. And the general idea is with dollars, it has to be worth about the same from when you get it to when you spend it. And that's one of the reasons why the wealthier people get, the more they try to diversify into assets, the more they try to diversify into income producing, you know, like stocks and so on. Now, the fact that they print the dollar has the added benefit of the wealthy and the elite that control the banking system can juice the value of those assets by depreciating the dollars faster. But Monero is trying to do two things that every currency ever has struggled with, because they tend to fight each other. And what I mean by that is you want to be something close to a fixed supply. But if there's anything that we've learned from Bitcoin, is being an actual fixed supply is a terrible idea. Okay, even gold increases by about 2% a year is the theory. It's hard to know. But so that problem has been pretty well solved with tail emission. Now, a certain amount of time might go by and you might want to make some kind of adjustment to that equation. But generally speaking, tail emission is, you know, definitely helped with that. But you also want to incentivize the intelligent use of capital. So what I mean by that is holding it for the sake of holding it, right? You want to always try to put currency to work, because otherwise what will happen is you'll end up with low money velocity, and low money velocity is not good either. You want to make sure that the continual exchange of assets. Now, this is what ties back into the circular economy thing. So saving money should be generating its own value, meaning there should be enough of a demand for that money where if you have money, then if you're not going to use it yourself and somebody else wants to use it now, then there should be a fixed price. It's called the price of money in normal economics, right? Where my $100, if I borrow it out for a year, should generate, you know, 6-8% by the time I get it back, because that's the value of just having the money and investing it in, you know, I mean, like the bond rate is what, 5% or whatever. I'm pretty defiatized at this point, so I'm not really keeping up with the exact dollar situation. But you do want to have an interest-bearing asset. Like, there should be a vehicle by which you can take a small amount of risk and you can get a small amount of return. That sets your floor for the value of the money itself, for the value of holding the money itself. And then if somebody comes along and wants to use it for something that they believe is going to be more productive, they should at least be over that number. And the higher the risk of the endeavor, the higher the percentage you should get on the money. And so the thing is, now let me tie it back to getting gas in your car, okay? And why it matters now, just we should obviously focus a lot of energy on getting the circular economy going, for sure. That needs to be the priority. But there needs to be people setting up systems by which you can get interest on the money for this reason. The gas station that sells you the gas, okay, there is credit going all the way back to the oil producer, okay? So the bank borrows money to the producer who's going to mine the oil, and then that guy borrows money in order to pay guys to get all of the equipment there, And then once he gets the oil, he sells it as a futures contract so he can start paying off his loan. And then people buy that futures contract, hoping that the yield on that is going to be higher than holding the dollars. The thing is there's all of this credit going through that system. And on the one hand, the reason there's so much credit the way it is because we live in a fiatized world. So they're trying to beat the inflation of the dollar. However, even if the dollar was not being inflated, they should be getting a return for risking their dollars. And if Monero has only a system of final transaction, and your only way to prove it is using a view key, well, now we've found ourselves back in the situation where you're going to end up taking people to court and proving that they did this and all of this other stuff. So you need to have a floor for how much you should expect for the low-risk liquidity provision. And then you need to have a smart contract system that allows people to borrow money for value-added operation. Now let's go back to the oil company. So an oil company wants to tap a new oil field. You believe that that oil field is going to generate revenue that will be more valuable than sitting on your Monero. So you establish, okay, the low risk, like the bond rate, the liquidity provision rate of Monero is right now 3% Monero annual, okay? So you're going to set your price somewhere between 3% and what you think the highest level of the risk would be in doing this. So let's say you tell the oil producer, I will borrow you this money at 6% Monero annually. Okay. So then they lock it away in the smart contract and they spend it out of the smart contract. Okay. And as they're spending it out of the smart contract, you are auditing that they are in fact doing what they claim they were going to do. Okay. And then when your term comes up, you get that money. Now, what does that look like as far as paying at the pump? Well, here's the thing. The revenue from that oil company is tied to people spending their Monero at the pump. And if the debt is denominated in Monero and not dollars, they would rather get Monero that has no chargebacks, that you can't, you know, when you pay with a credit card, they're losing money. But if you pay at the pump with Monero, they can directly apply that to the debt that is denominated in Monero. So it's not like you want to work on this and then get to this. It's like you want to slowly move what you're doing, which we're still working on circular economy for sure. And you, to a point, you always will. But right now it's like 90% circular economy, 10% financial world. But over time, we're going to move to like 70% circular economy, 30% financial world. And in order to get it to the point where you use Monero at a gas pump, you're going to want some of this stuff in place because you're going to want the people selling you that gas to have debts denominated in Monero because that's the transaction, right? Because right now, Monero lives in a world where if you want to use your Monero for fiat, you still have to use dollars. So now Monero is denominated in dollars instead of debts are denominated in Monero. You want to keep pushing that movement towards people denominating the. And Shortwave is like a god at this, right? Like if you say dollar instead of, you know, like 0.034 XMR, he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? We were just talking about money 2 minutes ago. Now you're talking about fiat debts. Like, let's go back to the money, you know, like, but the thing is he's right. You have to denominate your debts in Monero. And you also have to get the fuel pump to do it. You have to get the loan to do it. You have to get it to the point where we're back to where gold was 100 years ago. When you borrowed money, you borrowed it in gold. When you paid it back in gold. The debt was denominated in gold. In fact, dollar to this day still means 0.846 troy ounces of silver. $20 was defined as $20 was defined as 1 ounce of gold, and so on. That where fiat robbed its legitimacy from was denominating in gold. Go ahead.
But you know, I take your point that, you know, the person that is accepting the Monero, it's better that, you know, he can pay his bills in Monero. I mean, that's what makes it a circular economy. The part that I might take exception with, even though I understand your point, I might take exception with the continued proliferation of the usury and the parasite class of financial professionals that, you know, that have taken the system to where it is. In other words, you know, this will, if you continue to incentivize a parasite class through interest, then all this lending, you're basically going to digitalize a broken debt-based system, and you're not achieving the objective of, you know, responsibility, pay your debts. You know, you could still do installments, you could still do loans, but you have to, you know, we can never go back to the system where somebody benefits from dead money just sitting somewhere. You know, we can never go back to that system, because that's what the bankers are. And you know, most people that have been around crypto, and especially around privacy crypto for any length of time, you know, you have to admit the central bankers are your number one enemy. You know, they are the Satan himself in terms of, you know, who's our opposition. Anyway,
a big part of the problem I see is that people take on more debt than they can afford. I don't think debt is the problem. I think incentivizing the usage of debt above what you can afford is the problem. So, like, for example, if I take out a $2,000, and I'm going to use dollars here, if I take out if I use $2,000 on a credit card at 2%, which is what credit card companies charge per month on that credit card, that means my bill would be $40. My minimum payment would be $40 a month. Can I afford that? The answer is yes. If I took out $5,000, my bill would be $100. Can I afford that? Yes. If I took out $20,000, would I be able to afford that? Probably not. So the problem isn't necessarily the debt. It's the problem that people use more debt than what they can actually afford because they are incentivized to do so based on the dollar falling in value, because you'd rather purchase something of value now and have the debt, which you can then pay back in more and more worthless dollars over time. So if we use Monero, the minimum interest rate has to be inflation. Like, you would not take less than inflation. So that would mean currently the minimum interest rate you could possibly charge for a debt would be 0.8586%, whatever, because that is the inflation rate of Monero currently. So you would not want to take anything less than that. So you'd probably do like 1 or 2% or something like that, depending on the risk. But there's a good chance that in interest rates in Monero would be lower than dollars, because you're not losing 3, 5, 7% of your value per year.
So as there is no exact definition to usury, okay? So some people believe usury is any amount of interest. Some people believe it's an exorbitant amount of interest, which is pretty nebulous at best, right? But I would point out that no usury is usury. And let me just prove my case here real quick. If I borrow you an ounce of gold for 1 year, and then you give me back an ounce of gold at the end of the year, I have paid 2% of that gold for you to start generating returns now. And why I say that is that ultimately the supply of gold will have grown by 2%, okay? And the circulating supply of the gold is pretty much what establishes the value of that gold, or it's the bulk of what establishes the value of that gold. Money in hand has a certain value. That's why if you go buy a car and you have to get the bank involved, you get one price. But if you have cash in your hand, you get a different price. The cash in your hand has a greater value. Or there's another biblical principle, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? If I have money now and you need money now, that means the money that I have is worth more than the money that may come in the future. It's worth more than your paycheck in 6 months if you could use it to start an enterprise right now. But if I borrow the you that money, that means that you're trading to me risk. Okay. So if you get to know me, you'll know that I'm pretty well grounded in my biblical principles. Now, whether or not they match somebody else's biblical principles is one thing, but I take usury very seriously. But my position, what I'm trying to point out here is that you are using somebody if you borrow money and you even pay it back in full after a year or so, okay? Because they also could just take that money and put it in some kind of income yielding asset. Like maybe they could use it to lease some farmland, pay a guy to grow hay and sell the hay, and then sell the farmland at a higher price. The point is having money in hand has value, and then using that money should generate a return. Now, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because the reality is the financial system, like your average, like let's say you go to some local bank and they're going to take risk with depositors' money in order to finance your business. Well, those depositors are hoping for a return. That banker has done the due diligence of establishing your likelihood of paying. It's not like that banker didn't work 40 hours a week for 3 months to figure out how to get you the money, how much it should cost, what you actually need right now, verify that you have a contractor for your building or whatever. Work has been done. Labor has been done. We paid to audit software for a reason, right? I mean, Luke Parker is a talented developer, but even he is like, yeah, I want to pay to have this audited. Well, we pay the auditor for their labor, you see. Go ahead.
I guess my point is, you know, not to, you know, take away from being able to borrow. So the borrowing and the lending isn't such so evil in my eyes. It's the fractional reserve system, you know, that is basically cheating, you know, and creating a class of parasites. See, so my objective, I don't know if this is even possible, but, you know, it would be nice if, you know, privacy crypto could address this concern. My objective is to eliminate even the incentives for possibility of a parasite class to, you know, ever resurface.
I believe that Monero has done that with ViewKey. I mean, not perfectly, but it's as far as the realistic opportunity for somebody to fractionally reserve their Monero is virtually zero. If somebody borrows you Monero and Monero has view keys, and there's even, you know, custodial solutions with like multi-sig, and there's, you know, smart contract solutions and all of this other stuff. If you just believe somebody's going to borrow you Monero and they don't prove that they have it, then, I mean, honestly, you're probably too gullible to be borrowing money anyway, right? Like, it's the view keys allow for you to confirm that somebody has, in fact, put up the necessary capital. And honestly, I expect that system to get infinitely better with what we have coming down the line. Now, this is something where I would like to have kept up with it better, and I haven't. I wouldn't be surprised if Body has kept up pretty well with where view keys are going. So maybe he would have something to say about it.
Yeah, basically just, well, you can go ahead about it.
I was just going to say it's tied up with Seraphis, but, you know, now really I think Jamtis, all of these upgrades coming are going to make view keys more powerful, more robust. You won't have to use like trickery to figure out when funds have left an address. You'll just be able to know that they left the address. Like right now you have to do some kind of on-chain analysis, and it's obvious if you know what you're doing, but it's not straightforward. So like multi-sig and view keys are going to be significantly better whenever we get whatever the next major upgrade is going to be, which it sounds like full chain membership proofs plus Jamtis. So yeah,
pretty exciting stuff. So I wanted to talk to Luke about this, but you know, what do you guys think? Do you think, because Luke said that the Monero communities will not ever embrace proof of stake, and I don't think that's really being discussed right now. But what I do see in the community is that a lot of people and even developers are worried about Monero security. So right now, the the security budget of Monero per year is just like $20 million. And that's not too much. That's still on reach of a nation state. So I think there is incentive to improve Monero security. And so I think, you know, once we have that discussion, maybe proof of stake will be considered. What do you think? Like, Baldi, I talked about this on Twitter with you. Like, you were interested in the hybrid approach. I think the community will be more open to a hybrid approach.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I think it's really far down the future for us to be able to say. I personally, I do like proof of stake. I don't like proof of stake for Monero. I think that if privacy coin proof of stake is going to be viable, we want to see it tested on some other coins like Xano. And I'm perfectly okay with that because at the moment, Monero, like if we end up getting adoption quickly, we're not really going to have the capacity to stay really fully decentralized while onboarding, say, a billion people. Like, okay, if we do the store value thing, it's your savings vehicle. Okay, sure, we can get a billion people on in a year and stay decentralized, but we're going to need other coins is the point. Like, we're going to need help. And I think that proof of stake has efficiencies and has a lot of promise. I think you're right that the hybrid approach would probably be the best thing that that Monero would hope for. So we keep the CPU proof of work mining. I think that's really, really robust and resilient, especially if we get better adoption. Like right now, okay, we could hypothetically be attackable. We'd probably see it coming because it's still pretty high. Like the hash power required to attack Monero with CPUs is still pretty high. But you know, like getting 10x adoption and 10x the hash power would really, really put us into a solid position in terms of censorship resistance. But I do think that proof of stake is going to be very untenable. And by the time that we get there, like after all the years have passed that we've done all the other upgrades and we'd say, hey, you know, maybe this proof of stake thing has been hammered out. We figured it out. Monero's going to be very large at that point. And it's hopefully, right, we'll have a lot of adoption, which is going to make it even more difficult to change. I would think the best that we could hope for would to be able to do a hybrid kind of finality proof of stake. That might be more tenable, but I don't think we'll ever be able to go away, nor I don't think we should leave our CPU proof of work roots here.
I think Monero will, means in long term also, it will be like proof of stake, because the main problem with proof of stake is the security budget. How can you be sure that it's a completely unconfiscatable coins? Suppose like in the current phase of proof of stakes, the majority of coins are in transparent blockchain, basically surveillance blockchain. So unless we see a result like Zcash or even like Xeno, they successfully do a proof of stake with the full privacy, not half as privacy, which is currently available in Xeno as well as Zcash. Full chain privacy with full proof of stake. Then I think when the market will see, then I think, yeah, I think they will be fine. But I think Monero long term also, it will be proof of work. Because you have to understand, the ultimate goal is what? It's like anti-confiscation, means anti-state. Like the Monero will be like the last to go proof of stake.
Yeah, for sure, privacy is still the top priority. So like Xano now has confidential amounts while on proof of stake. So, you know, it will be...
Yeah, I will also say the view key. I think in future, when things get rough, when there will be like mandatory requirement to show your view keys in every transaction, I think Monero community has to decide whether to abandon view keys, because it's going to get rough.
I don't think anyone should abandon view keys, because the thing is you can just move stuff to a different wallet and your view keys are not going to cause you any issues. But the other thing that I'd point out is, number one, Monero's security budget, even with a small increase in price, the hash power will go up significantly, right? It's if people value Monero even a little bit higher, you're going to see huge adoption in mining. But another thing that I'd point out is, I'm with Body that you don't want to just like add, you know, you don't want to just add proof of stake to Monero without having seen it demonstrated somewhere effectively. But I'd also point out that the reward for adding it to Monero versus any other privacy, any other chain would be infinitely better, because a lot of the risk of proof of stake is from people trying to prevent transactions or trying to, you know, affect the blocks in some way. Well, when transactions are that level of anonymous, how are you going to pick out the people that you're trying to kick off the chain? How are you going to assess which transactions are which? So a lot of the concerns with proof of stake are mitigated just because of the fact that it is Monero. Now, there's also, like, some of the other concerns are still valid, but I'm just saying what a large portion of the reasons why I don't like proof of stake are mitigated if it was to be done on Monero, you know? And one of the, this actually ties into one of the things that we've seen in the news lately, which is, you know, with, we saw the senator, I think it, or a representative in Wyoming who's like, I'm going to fight this. I mean, just in the last, week, we've seen the censorship of people's political views revolving around a country with a lot of small hats. And we've also seen the overt banning of a human being over code that they wrote, right? And so we've seen an attack on code and we've seen an attack on political views. And then on top of that, socially, we've seen people basically banning humans for their views, which ties back into the use case for Monero just like octupled over the last week, right? Because now there is no denying that if you believe in freedom in any capacity, you have been kicked out of the world, all right? Like, because if the U.S. is supposed to be the last bastion of the First Amendment, and we just saw the economic and the political removed from its protections, and we already saw the religious element removed from its protections a few years ago, especially during the Wu flu, the First Amendment is gone, people. It's gone. Because even if you recover your lost ground now, the fact is people implemented it for a short period of time and the lemmings obeyed, right? So the First Amendment is totally gone. And under Trump, we already saw that they'll just ban something gun related with executive order. You know, so it's like if you think the Republicans are coming to save your Second Amendment rights, you're completely delusional. And the reality is the First Amendment is officially dead in the entire world. So Monero, people.
Yeah, that was pretty clear during the Wu flu, as you said. Like the simplest, most basic thing that you could have done was exercise your right to peaceably assemble at your preferred establishment of religion. I mean, that's rule number one. And it was just completely decimated. Like, you weren't allowed to go to church. You weren't allowed to peaceably assemble, like none of it, like, which is completely, it completely chops off any pretense that that exists. And now, like, you can see very clearly that they're going after free speech with some of the, what was that bill that passed the House this week? God's chosen people are now also the government's chosen people. You're not allowed to speak against them in any capacity. And I mean, maybe that won't get signed, but probably it will. And I'm probably exaggerating the nature of the criminality involved in, you know, questioning certain historical events. But in case you guys didn't, so just to stop dancing around it, they passed an anti-Semitism bill that, like, basically in certain forms criminalizes anti-Semitism in the United States. Like, that's, and you know, not that I think that anyone should be anti-Semitic. Like, why should you be racist? That's stupid. But if you want to be a piece of shit and talk racism, you have the right to do that. And that's, like, that's fundamentally protected speech. And even though this thing will probably end up struck down somewhere along the lines in the Supreme Court, they're going to use it with impunity against a lot of people that can't defend themselves before that kind of thing happens. You know, like we say it all the time, the process is the punishment. And they're going to be able to, like, they can do this stuff. And then when they get sued, if they get sued, then the only thing that's going to happen is they're going to print more money and take more taxes to pay the people that sued them, at least, you know, the federal government. So, yeah, I mean, just to reiterate what you're saying there, First Amendment is basically gone.
They're coming after every right in the Bill of Rights. You know, the Fourth Amendment is in jeopardy. You know, the only thing that maybe the Third Amendment, you know, no British soldiers have tried to sleep in my spare bedroom recently. You know, every other right, it's been attacked and with vigor. So, you know, like the Fourth Amendment is really what this show is mostly about. I mean, you know, we care about the First Amendment, but it's the Fourth Amendment, the right to privacy, that is so crucial. And, you know, I had a friend of mine. I was on the phone with him, and he works for a big defense contractor. And he says, you know, I'm sorry, pal. You know, privacy is dead. Right? There's no more privacy. You know, and I keep telling him, you know, we need to get off this telephone. We need to get on to session or something. And he says, oh, you know, privacy's dead. They can get into session. They can break into session and all that. I said, I don't care if they can break in or not. I'm going to make it as hard as humanly possible for them to listen to my worthless dribble. You know,
I know I've taken up a lot of airtime, but there's something that people need to realize about this conversation. It was an overwhelming majority of both left and right that passed this bill. Even if it doesn't get signed, what that tells you is it's over. All right. They've already got the vast majority of people in the House of Representatives, in the Senate, and so on. And the other thing is, it doesn't, every single person running for president right now on a political, on a party ticket that gets more than 1% of the vote, that's whether it be Kennedy Jr., Trump, Biden, the Libertarian candidate, all of them supported the lockdowns. Well, at least when it happened.
Wait, really? Kennedy? I didn't realize that Kennedy supported the lockdowns.
Yeah, he supported the lockdowns. All right. Now, varying degrees aside, it doesn't matter.
Kennedy supported the lockdowns?
Let me see just to what degree.
He was
anti-vax at the time, but he still supported the 2 weeks to slow the spread thing. I'm going to see if I can find something real quick. But what, and the other thing is, we already know he's got issues with the Second Amendment, and he's got some issues with, but the thing is there is no political way out of this, and it is a well-established fact. They're already going to come for you, so why even stop fighting in the first place? Go ahead.
Well, you know, you want to carry values forward. You want to carry the values that are really important to you, you know, like you're going to build. You know, each of us, I consider each person that takes the time to get on this this forum a potential leader in his or her own community. And so, you know, I would expect that, you know, everyone would carry the most important values and from which should stem, at least they do for me, you know, the Bill of Rights.
Let me play this real quick just so people can follow you. Oh, no, I can't. Shit. Go ahead, continue, guys. It's okay. Can't play it.
Anyway, I was just, you know, I consider us all, you know, potential leaders of our respective communities in that we, you know, just to get on here, it shows we give a crap about the future of humanity. You know, we may have given up on this, you know, this beacon on the hill we once called, you know, United States of America. But it's at the same time, I don't think it's our cue to give up on all that we know is right and good. And I think we need, you know, it's for us to carry that into our community and continue to.
Oh no, Google, sir.
Yeah.
No offense, but if you still think stop.
It's all right. I did find the. Let me play this actually, guys. I did find.
Use brave search.
I know. Hold on a second.
Yeah, things will get much tougher in the future. That's why I don't think proof of stake will ever come in Monero.
I did want to play this Noriel Rubini thing. I think I found it here.
Hello, Douglas. Hello, everyone.
Hold on one second.
There could be, hypothetically, a situation in which someone in a bad regime would find it useful to be able to receive money through Bitcoin, right?
But what about all the other crypto?
Hold on. Sure. Some of them are valuable too. But hold on.
There's
hold
a on later. Number that can
Peter,
be great.
Hold on. If you admit even one case of utility for Bitcoin, you can't go around continuing to say that it is nothing. You can argue about the price. You can say it's overpriced or underpriced or whatever, but you can't keep using the argument that it has no utility because you just acknowledge that it might.
I'll tell you why not. As long as that, how to say, Bitcoin wallet in Moscow
is on an exchange, unless that's not the case, you can transfer the money and that dictator the next day can essentially seize all that money from you. The same way you can expropriate through taxation or expropriation your real assets, your financial assets, your money, your deposits. If they want to do it, as long as it's on a wallet, they know who you are and they know what money is there, they can take it from you. Unless it's 100% anonymous and decentralized and blah, blah, blah. And guess what? No government in the world, not only autocrats, but also Democrats, allowing a system in which everything is 100% anonymous. That's not going to be acceptable. But unfortunately, you can have all the wealth you want into crypto. If a dictator wants to screw you, they'll screw you, guaranteed. Actually, it's easier. Law enforcement authorities, you well know, prefer actually to find terrorists, human traffickers, when they do transaction using blockchain because, you know every transaction, where it is instead of having this domino of financial center offshore and so on. So they can track you much better. The good guys, the bad guys can track you even better.
Eric, okay, you can.
That was it. So Nouriel Roubini actually understands Bitcoin pretty well, and he's saying unless something like Monero.
The funny thing is, they know about all the techs and the problem, but they won't go directly Monero route. Otherwise, they will reveal too much.
Well, he's saying the governments won't allow Monero, though. If ultimately, he's saying they're going to ban Monero. But he sees the only Bitcoin being something that functions like Monero. But he thinks if it then does offer such utility that governments won't allow it to exist. Just kind of
currently,
Bitcoin is just to continue to exist.
I wanted to say the thing that is never mentioned is the moneyness of Monero. For me, means that like decentralized. Distributed atomic clock, but we have it like 2 minutes now. But that's what never meant like the cost, the price, the value, transactions. But no one ever mentions, let's say, shortwave surfer finds the largest Mersenne prime, defines the next perfect number. And if I would find such a prime number, I would put it on a USB stick and put it on my garden. I would dig a hole and put it there. It would be there for the next 10,000 years. That would be, and the way I find it, not by backtracking, I would burn that heuristic and I would be the first one until the end of time that finds that prime number or shortwave surfer for this case. So if I want to submit that to the blockchain, when we will have 100 blocks a second, I want that time to be precise, and that time will be precise only by proof of work, because the rest is subjective. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we know that proof of work will stay in Monero for a long time. The major problem with this one, proof of stake, is many of the proof of stake coins forget about base layer privacy. They don't even have network layer privacy. Like even Monero needs like metadata level privacy, like actual network layer privacy, but still, it's far better when it's in a proof of work, CPU mining, as well as with some Dandelion Plus and other like Tor or I2P protection. It's still far better compared to other chains, which they use like infrastructure in like AWS system. It's actually much worse. So yeah, I think proof of stake will be like a long time. In other chains, they will do their experiments, but for Monero, I think it will be proof of work for a long time.
I
was just going to say, I'm going to give a little hope here and say that governments can't ban an idea. Monero is an idea, and it is an idea that will not go away. For example, I discovered Bitcoin in 2011 and did some very preliminary reading on it and said, oh, that will never work. It will be shut down. The government won't allow this to exist. And then I ran into it again in 2013 in a news article from a newspaper, an actual like big, like one of the big newspapers. And I'm like, why hasn't the government shut that down yet? And then I started looking into it more. And I was like, oh my God, I see now. I get it. I had that light bulb moment. And Monero is the same way. Monero is Bitcoin in 2011.
And people often forget that even once upon a time, voting was considered rare. It was unacceptable. It was a world of kings
and dictators, autocrats. But now, and same with gun rights, it will be like, it was unacceptable that people will have their own warship, private armies, cannons, and guns and everything. But then people started having them. People started having property rights, voting, and then 1776. And we know what happened after.
I like Nanman. Is there a mechanism to crowdfund to buy land and create a Monero city state in South America? I know places where it would be viable.
Kuno.
Kuno.
I think that already kind of exists with the special autonomous regions or whatever in, oh God, what is the name of that country? Oh, I'm forgetting. I know something like this exists already.
Ecuador?
No, Liberland? Liberland?
No, not Liberland. It was Ecuador. It's the, yeah, you're right. It is. I'm almost certain it is Ecuador, but I cannot remember the name of the city right offhand, but it's like the special autonomous region in Ecuador, and I cannot remember its name right off the top of my head.
Yeah, so both cities are fun, but the thing is, yeah, they lack the gun rights. That's the problem. All the problem in South America is due to that lack of gun rights.
Okay, so I double-checked, I looked into it. It was not that Robert Kennedy was in favor of the lockdowns, but he was in favor of the spending bill. So, and if you continue, some of the other versions of the spending bill that would cause serious concern, backing 3% home mortgages with tax-free bonds, and then restricting natural gas exports, and basically offering favorable loans to small businesses as opposed to corporations, and preventing corporate union busting, and a lot of other things that you would think that Monero would definitely stand against. But my question would be, wouldn't the biggest threat to freedom of speech that's left on the table, right? So the Citizens United vote, the entire premise was that your money is speech, right? And that corporations were people. And a lot of people hated that. But honestly, it's a natural evolution of, if you have a separate entity that takes its own risk and defends its own interest in return for those who are investing in it, well, then it should be allowed to have its own speech, right? So if you were to flip that on its head, if you were to say that, so decorporatizing, if you go to his campaign site, he has this whole thing about decorporatizing and going like all in on unions. Well, the problem is what's the difference between a union and a corporation? So now you're creating a two-tiered system where unions have, quote, freedom of speech politically, but corporations do not. So in other words, a corporation can't take a position politically, but a union can. On top of the fact that you can just print money and send it to, you know, unions and individuals buying homes and creating bonds and subsidizing them by the government. So in other words, it's the same nonsense, just changing the benefactor.
I'm kind of the opinion that it's just about time to just laugh maniacally as we're headed down the road to hell. Purposely, I mean, if you really wanted to go that direction, you could like purposely vote for what you know to be bad policies, vote for these $1 trillion spending bills, tell your congressman you want them so that the U.S. dollar inflates faster and loses value faster, and people get fucking fed up with it until they just scream and do and go and start ignoring these crazy people. I don't know if that's the right way to go about things, but it's definitely a thought.
You know, most in the freedom movement are actually, that's what they want to see. They want to see a rapid decline of the dollar rather than this hanging on. They'd rather see the dollar, the banking crisis, that 3-day weekend when you wake up and all the banks are closed and you can't get at your money. They want to see that happen sooner rather than later, you know. And I know, you know, if any of you are like me, you've taken steps to, lessen the effects of something like that happening, you know. Bring it on. You know, I'm amongst that group. Go ahead.
I think I think the analogy is whistling past the graveyard.
Best solution is local election. Fix the local election, then rest of the things will happen naturally.
Yeah, there's something to be said about creating shields at the local level politically. Building layers upon layers of people that would be required to be prosecuted in order to even get to the base layer where people are actually producing real things.
I listened to a recent podcast, they talked about how none of the top officials in the United States today, Merrick Garland, Mayorkas, Blinken, none of them have valid oaths of office on file through a Freedom of Information Act. None of them have a valid oath of office. So should they be brought up on treason, they would not be able to be convicted for treason, you know, with their activity funding, you know, these immigration expedition camps in Turkey and in Qatar and in the Darien Gap. I mean, these people are, you know, clearly traitors to the United States, and they don't have an oath of office. So I took it upon myself to look at, you know, the sheriff's Constitutional Sheriffs Association, and Sheriff Mack has a good website. But anyway, he basically goes in and talks about the oaths of office. He says, check your local sheriff, do a Freedom of Information Act, you know, request on your local sheriff and try to, you know, get them to send you a copy of his oath of his signed oath of and notarized signed oath of office. And I did with my local sheriff, and it wasn't satisfactory. It had wording that was that made me believe that he would obey an unconstitutional order. And Sheriff Mack has some good examples of what an oath of office should be on his website, but it's interesting stuff. Anyway, maybe too late.
Local election is the solution. Sounds like elections are the solution. And
you know,
here
in Alaska, Alaska was onboarded as a territory, and so we still don't have counties as per the constitutional requirements. We also don't have sheriffs as per constitutional requirements. And actually, none of Alaska's police forces are legal either. They just kind of act as a de facto police department, and that's what they do. There'd be a decent argument for state troopers, but that's a whole nother thing. And it's very similar in Puerto Rico. So the moment at which the United States switched over to basically full-blown empire, which is a lot longer ago than people actually realize, but when the United States became an empire, as they added things, they the breaking the ground for that was when I think it was Missouri became a slave state, even though there was an agreement that it was too far north to be a slave state. Like, that was the first full-blown encroachment on the rules that were set aside for how to bring on a larger nation. And by the time Alaska became a state, they didn't go through any of the motions of what the Constitution provides for how executive decisions are made and so on. So basically, it's just a federal territory. But it has all of the same rights in Congress as you would if you were a state. But they didn't even codify into the Constitution the appropriate measures by which, you know, these people are brought to the federal government from Alaska and all kinds of other stuff. And so there's definitely an argument to be made that at the local level, you could do a lot of damage to federal tyranny, especially in certain places. And Alaska would definitely be one of them. I like some of the things that they're doing in the Free State Project to try to curtail the federal power. But honestly, it's a shell game. The real solution is to fix it, you know.
Guys, I'm gonna play this a little bit.
Yeah, so people, you guys have to try the local stuff. The local elections are the only way.
It's not a news report. Come on. Nah, it's not a news report. I'm sorry.
So one of the things that's really interesting about this is the Talmud, which is the oral law that's scribed into documentation. The Talmud would actually be banned under the anti-Semitic. So, in other words, it in the bill, it bans parts of the Talmud where the Talmud says the Jews killed Jesus. It would also ban five Gospels, at least. You could also argue it would ban Revelation. It would ban at least four Old Testament documents. So it definitely bans most of the Bible.
Crazy.
Well, I mean, the Talmud is the Jewish law, right? So that, and they'll tell you that. You know, if you have interviews with the prominent rabbis, they'll tell you that the Talmud is Jewish law, and its roots are based in ancient Babylonia. I mean, that's where it started. So, and the Babylonians were, you know, Baal worshippers. You know, they're Satan worshippers. So, you know, it's just how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? You know, it's like, to me, it doesn't matter. You know, you could get into all this talking shit about Israel or whatever. It doesn't even matter because, you know, we have the solutions in front of us. All we have to do is have the courage to implement them. And it doesn't matter what, you know, what their identity is. We don't have to use identity politics in response to their identity politics.
Pause that part of the video, Doug. Pause it right there. So the IHRA is the organization that gets to set the definition for anti-Semitism. So this is a quasi-government agency at the UN, and it's privately run. It has absolutely no controls at the United States level. And they can change the definition of anti-Semitism and still be covered by this law. So in other words, there is a foreign agency. I don't even know if there's any Americans in the agency. But the main thing is this is a foreign agency that is setting the definitions for the law, which this one precedent, even all of the other stuff about its effect on the First Amendment, just the precedent that the legal definitions are being set by an international agency. I think the first example would be when certain environmental regulations are defined by foreign agencies. But this one is one that would restrict the First Amendment being set. The definitions are set by a foreign agent.
Look, you know who your leaders are. You know who your leaders are by who you are not allowed to criticize. You know, I mean, Netanyahu, basically put out the word that, you know, this shit on the campuses has to stop. And what does World Economic Forum Governor Abbott in Texas do? He goes and he violently, you know, Kent State style, violently shuts down, free speech. Like, I don't like doing that either. I don't like protesting. That's not my style. But, you know, but what Governor Abbott authorized in shutting down free speech is, he's Netanyahu's puppet. I mean, the most of them are owned by, you know, the Israeli lobby. You know, if you haven't figured that out, you're way behind the curve, man.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Oh, so for those of you listening who still would back like the idea that maybe the Republicans can save us or maybe they're different in some way. So I regularly go to the gym. I never watch the news, but the news is at the gym and it even has sound when you're in the locker. And it was so hilarious to me. I guess it's called Gutfield. It's like a Fox News like roundup show or whatever.
Greg Gutfeld is hilarious.
Yeah, so on this show, they openly advocated for, okay, well, this individual who is transgender, female to male, because they started early enough, it's wrong for people to challenge his right to participate in sports or something like that. And then by the end of the show, they also had a male to female transgender who started early enough. And so they've already moved their goalpost in what, a year to the point now where they are openly advocating for trans rights in the sports thing or whatever. Now, I could give two shits about the issue, but the reason why I bring it up is because it was only a year ago that the idea was, if you took a position on transgender stuff in schools and all of that, then the Republicans had your back on, supposedly, like, if your position was that transgender people shouldn't be allowed to participate in the other gender sports. Well, now it's like, as long as you started early enough. And now it's like, well, as long as... And so that's how fast these people move the goalpost towards the UN agenda, toward the CFR agenda. And the reality is, I'm sure within a year that will be the common position amongst, quote, conservatives, end quote, because that's how they move you along. They just get a little bit to the left of wherever you stand on a given issue, and they slowly pull you in with different arguments to keep moving the ball down the field. But in reality, on these core issues, true constitutional issue, right? This is unambiguously, is the First Amendment still law in the United States or not? Their financial backers and their oligarchs and their rulers have taken a firm position on this, and they all get in line. And they make sure that just enough of the numbers within the party align with getting it passed. And that's why anybody who thinks that there's a political solution to this is delusional, right? There's no way, because we've already seen that the system is gamed and rigged from the very beginning.
The funny thing about all of this is it's actually counterproductive. They're actually increasing more anti-Semitism because of all of this. And the point is, they actually are not underlying the main problem, the infiltration by the Bolsheviks, the infiltration by the Maoists in the campuses, college campuses, starting with Columbia and the other Marxist institution. They are not underlying the main problem. They are just trying to do half-assed solution and trying to increase more anti-Semitism. Now, one could say, are they doing it intentionally, or they are just too much incompetent?
So I just looked it up. In September of 2023, you have a news article, destroying the dreams of young female athletes is now equality. So it's a show entirely about banning. This is the Gutfield guy I was talking about before. So in September of 2023... he's taking a hard stance against transgender athletes, which I don't, the whole argument is ridiculous because public schools are a fucking plague. But the point is that's his position. And then by May of 2024, he's trying to defend the rights of transgender athletes. So it took a year and, what, 7 or 8 months for them to pivot.
Yeah, we will get
more in favor of their overlord, right?
It took less time than that. It took less than a year. If you said September of 23.
All right, yeah.
24.
All right, guys. We covered a lot today. We will see more censorship.
What's happening with the Trump and Libertarian Party convention? You guys heard that?
Yeah, I did. I heard Trump is going to be speaking there at the Libertarian National Convention.
Oh, it's going to be wild. It's gonna be
People from that community actually have reached out to us trying to get us involved in the Libertarian National Convention. We went a few years ago.
Should go there. Seriously. That would be a very big event. You guys should go there. Flags and everything.
Maybe we'll talk about it next week. We'll have somebody from the, you know, that participates in the Libertarian National Convention jump up on here. They're also hosting like a party, an after party, and we may get involved in that. It seems pretty interesting. But yeah, Trump is going to be there talking. There's a lot of controversy over it. People in the Libertarian Party debating whether or not that's a good thing, whatever. I mean, I think it's a good thing. Have, you know, one of the main presidential candidates come to your forum
whether, you know, he's going to be espousing ideas that agree, that are libertarian, doesn't matter. I mean, the point is he's now there engaging with the libertarian community. And the fact that he is there means that these ideas are going more mainstream because he's trying to cater to this community, which he now is becoming a decent block of voters. So I think that's bullish for liberty for sure.
Unless they vote with their dollars by buying a Monero Noto, which are on sale for a absolute steal of a price. And if you don't own a Noto, if you don't have one coming your way, then your vote doesn't matter. Okay, so make sure you have voted with your dollars. I'm going to get you to plug this more, Doug. You watch. I'm going to get you to plug this more. Everybody needs to buy a Noto, or I'm ashamed of you. And your mother is going to look down upon all of your accomplishments and say, well, what did he really do? You know?
MoneroNoto.com. We are hustling right now, trying to get this thing over the finish line. That is one of the reasons why I don't like to push it too much, because I want us to be there at the finish line, and then I won't be shutting up about it. But yeah, it certainly does help if you guys pre-order them. Sold, I think, almost 70 at this point. It's evolved, improved greatly since the outset of this project, and continues to evolve. And we hope to ship these before Monero. I hope to have them in hand at MoneroCon.
Yeah, so nice.
That's one good last thing to mention, guys. MoneroCon, it is coming up. It's the June 8th, I believe, is the first day. It's going to be Saturday, Sunday. Actually, I think Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Obviously, we're trying to get there. We've been at every MoneroCon. Certainly trying to make this one happen as well. Just have to juggle it with my day life and my fiat life, but certainly hoping to make that happen. And I highly recommend anybody that can make it there, that's, you know, it's in the realm of possibilities, to really try to make it, especially right now. It's so exciting to be a part of the Monero community right now. We had Luke on earlier. I mean, if those things don't excite you, you're in the wrong place. If they do excite you, you should definitely try to make your way to MoneroCon in June. It's going to be it's going to be amazing. You'll experience the renaissance that Luke is talking about in first person. I'm gonna go ahead and
close it out. He'll be the guy covered in gold jewelry, and he'll
Slave Blocker, will you be there?
I would hope so. Thanks for asking me, Doug. I have no words. I don't know what to say.
Will you be at MoneroCon? You're not going to be able to disguise yourself, because that voice is way too recognizable, man. Unless you've been using a voice disguiser this whole time. Yeah, then,
and I'm sure the dude's going to be lit like a torch, having such a good time. It's just like everyone.
I really hope you do go. And if you do, come say hello. We'll have a beer. We'll hang out. Yeah, guys, let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and end the show here. We do these shows every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Reach out if you want to participate in any way in particular. If you want a project, if you have a project that you want to present, whatever it is, reach out to us, MoneroTopia@protonmail.com. The show is all about, you know, participating with the community, being open as possible, as I'm sure you've realized from the format. So participate, guys. That's what this is all about. Going to go ahead and close this out if I can find the video.
And thanks, Wizard Swap, for coming on and doing what you guys do.
Thank you so much.
It's been fun. It's been very fun.
Yeah, appreciate you hanging the whole time. Greatly appreciated allowing the community to ask you all the questions. And I was impressed by your answers. I'm sure everybody else was. So looking forward to continuing the relationship with Wizard Swap. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you for joining us on this week's MoneroTopia episode. We stream live shows every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. You can find and subscribe to our show on YouTube and Odyssey, or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter or join us in the MoneroTopia Telegram group. See you all next week.